Got a happy
life.
Okay. Good morning, and welcome to the last meeting of the year. It's December 13, 2011. This is the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Would you please join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk, could you read the changes to the agenda, please?
There's amended item to consent, number 6, a request to approve a resolution to surplus and transfer ownership of a used construction office trailer to the Dana Adobe Napomo Amigos used for the use of a construction office during renovations. Staff is recommending this item be amended to add page 4 of 4 to the staff report that was inadvertently left out of the packet during the printing process. At the time the core agenda was posted, it appeared that page 4 of the staff report contained a reference to the attachments and was not included in the packet. It was later discovered that page 4 was blank and the reference to the attachments was contained on page 3. The staff report contains 3 pages of the information, but the page numbers indicate that there are 4 pages to the report. Staff recommends a clarification that the 4th page was not included in the packet as it contained no information. Item number 23, Workforce Investment Act Local Plan Modification Program Year 2011-2012. Staff is recommending this item be amended to add pages 22 through 71 to Attachment 1 that were inadvertently left out of the packet during the printing process.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. We're going to move into our consent agenda, and we do have some requests to speak. So if you're going to speak on consent and you haven't got a slip in, please do so, and then we'll go to public comment for general items after that. Eric Greening, you want to speak on number 1, please, followed by our HR director, Tammy Douglas Schatz.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening. Good morning. And this is the introduction of an ordinance on truancy. The time to focus on content of the ordinance will be at the hearing, but right now I want to focus on the setting of the date. The date proposed here, January 17th, is grossly unfair to the people most affected by this ordinance, the students themselves. If you're determined to move forward with this thing, at least show the decency and accountability of waiting until a Tuesday when school is not in session. While homeschooled students whose lives could be disrupted by this ordinance could show up, and I hope they do for a civics lesson they will never forget, the vast majority of the people threatened with the fines and sanctions could access this hearing on the proposed date only by ditching school. Isn't that ironic? Spring break might work. With 10 school districts in the county, all of which include substantial unincorporated territory, if they're not entirely in the unincorporated area, I don't know that you will find their spring breaks all in. We need more information. When the ordinance calls for students suspected of truancy to be detained, we need details on where and under what conditions and for how long. The students need to know these details as well as the parents. This date setting is not a trivial matter. You have the opportunity to provide a lesson in democracy or a lesson in disregard of democracy. Please don't blow it. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Tammy Douglas Schatz, followed by Mike Brown, please. Ms. Schatz?
Thank you, Chairman Hill, members of the board. You have 3 labor contracts on your agenda today, and with their approval, 90% of all positions in the county will be covered by a second-tier pension, and 100% of employees will have increased their contribution to pension cost-sharing. Just a few highlights from the contracts in front of you. First, the trades and crafts bargaining unit represented by SLOCIA has agreed to a 3-year contract where year 1 of that contract has 0 wages, and they have agreed to reopen to negotiate wages as well as pension cost sharing and removed their automatic wage increase formula. This is a very generous contract for the county and very selfless of the employees to agree to these provisions. The district attorney investigators have also agreed to zero wages for the term of their contract and have removed their wage provision that has a formula wage increase in it. They have agreed to significant pension sharing and a second-tier pension. And finally, our probation peace officers have made a significant sacrifice for the betterment of the county. They have a zero-wage contract and gave up a formula for wage increases that could have resulted in an over 9% compensation increase. So we are very grateful for all the employees for coming forward and making some sacrifices for the betterment of the county. So I'd like to thank all those employees as well as the managers that were on the negotiating teams. That's a great way to end the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. And I'm going to let board members join in real quickly on this, too, because this is another significant step in the pension and pay reform that the board, working with our labor team, has put forward. And there's a lot to be pleased with. And the as Tammy mentioned, our employee units continue to step up, continue to sacrifice to be part of a solution to show that public service is, in fact, first and foremost to them. And so I myself am salute our units, in particular today the Trades and Crafts and Services of SLO-SEA, the district attorney investigators, and our probation officers, all of whom have given up things to move forward with what we need to do to have a sustainable financial future, and it's to their great credit. And I know this board is thankful for that. And did any of my colleagues want to join in while it's fresh and current?
Yes, I was just going to take the opportunity to do what you have just done, Chairman Hill, to thank our employees for stepping up. We just returned from our State Association of Counties annual meeting 2 weeks ago, and we did talk about pension issues and cost to counties, and San Luis Obispo County was mentioned in numerous workshops as being a lead county, working with their employees and achieving some of these cost savings. And we're very appreciative, and I want to extend my thanks personally to all of our public service employees in the county.
Well, Mr. Gibson?
Well said by my two previous colleagues. You know, the idea of shared sacrifice has been manifest here. And as you look around with our sister counties, the fact that we have not actually had a filled position laid off in the time that we've been wrestling with this, thanks to the kinds of agreements that have been brought forward, the generosity of existing employees to buy back certain positions, is truly extraordinary, and it really was brought home a couple weeks ago when we were in San Francisco at CSAC.
Supervisor Meacham?
Thank you, and I sat in on a four-hour pension discussion in San Francisco, but I want to make sure people are aware of the fact that this didn't just happen overnight. It took a lot of discussion with the county employees, a lot of the folks that were involved in this, and it's working to be able to sustain the financial responsibility that we have as a county over the years to come. Also, I want to put a plug in, too.
So with that, I'm sorry to delay. Mr. Brown, followed by Jeff Edwards, please.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. This item is a proposed contract with a firm called Econ Northwest to conduct a land use economics study. The scope of work down in the contract says that the county has two main objectives. One, estimate how much additional future residential development is likely to occur in unincorporated regions of the county as a result of potential measures to limit growth and development in unincorporated rural areas. In other words, and this is part of the quote, in other words, if the county restricts growth in the rural areas, how much of it will shift to urban areas? And Madam Clerk, do you want to start the clock on me? So I don't. Thank you. Honesty and so
we need to do that.
But this is a remarkable thing here because the county's already adopted measures to redirect growth pursuant to the Smart Growth Plan and has a number of tools underway. So is this saying you actually didn't know when you adopted this stuff what some of these impacts would be? It's just absolutely stunning. And as you know, CoLab and other forums has pointed this out. And what's interesting about this firm is in Portland and is pretty much focused on the Pacific Northwest, although they do things in other areas. The principal who's going to be assigned to this is a planner named Joanne Matuszynski Moore, according to the contract. She would appear to be quite biased toward smart growth and so forth. In a comment on an article for the Natural Resources Defense Fund, Ms. Moore said, "The market is most definitely moving toward compact development, and local governments and regional agencies are responding accordingly. But how do we accomplish land use improvements above and beyond what the market would do on its own?" Sort of phenomenal statement. This is the real challenge of SB 375 process, she says. This is your objective consultant to tell you what these impacts, what might get built. It might be better to say what won't get built and what's the impact of that both ways. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Merry Christmas. Mr. Edwards, followed by Michael Wynn, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hill, board members. Good morning. My name is Jeff Edwards. I wanted to make some remarks today about the same item, number 14, which is a land use economics study as part of a larger scope, which includes a complete community survey, infill subdivision and development standards, and a community design model. This is all related to the strategic, a sustainable community strategy, and you're using grant funds to move this forward. The backdrop for all this strategic development or smart growth, of course, is that if we optimize urban development, it'll give us a better chance to conserve our agricultural lands and open space around those areas. So that all makes sense. And why I'm here today, I'd like to urge your board to really make this a meaningful effort and more than an exercise. And part of that, in my opinion, would include the inclusion of the Oceano Airport land that lies in Oceano to be part of this. And as your board may know from the earlier contracts that you let, there are four communities involved in this overall program. They include the North County communities of San Miguel and Templeton, and then, of course, in the South County, we have Oceano and Napomo. So the airport land of about 58 acres is in the middle of Oceano. It's extremely strategically located. And if it's considered for development or target development, which this program looks at, it has a great a deal of potential to shape the community of Oceano in a very positive way. Moreover, the property represents a significant revenue source for this county, and I think that's something that should be considered. So in closing, again, I support the process. I support this land use economics study. But I believe to make it really contribute to the overall enterprise that Oceano, specifically the airport land, should be considered in as part of the target development areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Wynn, please.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm a director on working with them on that. I'm here today to talk primarily about item 19, which is the authorization of Napomo Community Services District to take a lead position in forming a tax assessment district on the Mesa. And I have nothing new and startling to tell you about that. I think we've done our homework. I know your staff have worked very diligently and worked well with ours. We appreciate it very much. We have a serious water shortage problem on the Mesa. It will not go away. this is an important step in ameliorating that condition, and I thank you for helping us all these years.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. And finally, Mr. Barrow on consent and then closing it to public on consent.
Good morning. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. Item 18 is submittal of right-of-way documents accepting conveyance from the Los Osos Community Services District for the real property located on 8th Street and El Moro Avenue in the Los Osos Wastewater Project. Los Osos. I have some concerns about that because the district has filed for bankruptcy protection, and I went to those hearings, as some of you may have, and the judge decided in favor of the county and the district, but the decision was appealed. So all the assets of the community services district are subject to the judge's decision in the coming trial. So accepting a bankruptcy property is inappropriate in my view, because you're not just going to talk about this particular pump station on 8th Street, which I live about five blocks from, but you're going to talk about all the rest of the some 30 properties, some of which are for the sewer that the Community Services District owns. The one at the Tri-W site next to the library, that was a $3 million property. I think you need to find out what the disposition of the bankruptcy is before you start accepting sewer property. You're putting the cart before the horse, as has been done before. Is that really necessary for you to, at this time, take that property? So, say that you will. I would suggest that you would put this off until the bankruptcy proceedings have gone forward, and so you know the disposition of the Community Services District. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. And finally, Marina Washburn, please, on number six, and then we'll come to the board.
Good morning. Marina Washburn from the Dan Adobina Pomo Amigos, and I'm here to thank you again for your support of item number six, the construction trailer that is desperately needed by our facility, and we're so happy that you are considering this. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and keep up the great work. Echo Mr. Wynn's earlier comments that it is a wonderful organization, the Dana Amigos. And with that, I'm bringing it back to the board for comments or questions from board members, beginning with, Mr. Gibson, going that way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Items 1, 13, and 23.
All right. We're going to be here a long time.
all very brief.
Mr. Patterson?
Item 14 for a comment.
14. Mr. Teixeira? All right, I like that. Mr. Meacham,
14.
All right. Let's begin with Mr. Gibson on number one, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if our Chief Probation Officer, Mr. Salio, who's the point person on the proposed truancy ordinance, would come forward. I did have one question posed to me, and I would wonder if he might confirm my reading of the proposed ordinance as to how it pertains to homeschoolers.
Yes, Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. If in the ordinance, under the exceptions, under 7.23.030, item number 3, homeschoolers are exempt under this ordinance. So it clearly states that homeschoolers receiving instruction at home would be fall under the exemption. So they would not be subject to this ordinance. So if there's a case where somebody is in homeschool, if their parents write them a note saying they're at home school, or if they don't and they are questioned by law enforcement, they can simply say, I'm at a homeschooling, and the officer can verify that by calling the parent or calling whatever home school they go to if need be. But that was considered when we looked at the ordinance, and that was how we addressed that, by exempting homeschooling from the ordinance.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. Number 13, Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the modifications to the memorandum of understanding between the county and the Friends of the
from the State Strategic Growth Council, administered by the Department of Conservation, and it will provide opportunities for ample public input. There's a public workshop requirement as part of the contract, as well as a study session before the Board of Supervisors. So as the study commences and proceeds through the process, there will be opportunities for the public to weigh in and become educated and give input on this particular project.
Okay. And Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's absolutely essential that economy is part of the equation when you're talking about a lot of our policy issues. And far too often, I don't think we do that. So I'm really pleased to see that we are having an economic analysis done on some of these policies that have been established so that that can be incorporated in our discussion. So I'm very supportive of this.
Great. Thank you.
With that, I will make a motion to approve.
We have one more. I'm sorry, and then I'll go to you. He's still going. Mr. Gibson on 23.
I've been pretty good in recent weeks. Number 23 is a modification to the Workforce Investment Act local plan, and I was just curious if there was someone here from DSS.
I see someone strolling down the aisle.
Who could just clarify exactly what the modification was or will be.
Nick, why don't you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Nick Schultz, Department of Social Services, Executive Director of the County's Workforce Investment Board. What you have in front of you is a modification to the existing local plan. The local plan is a two-year plan. It's a state requirement for receipt of funds from the feds for workforce development that's ultimately passed down to the county. That requirement is pushed down. The state's planning requirement is pushed down to the locals. This is their document. It's largely compliance on the local part. The board does have its own existing strategic plan. This is different. This is for the state of California to be in compliance with money sent to the local areas with the federal government.
Okay. I guess my thought was that it by the titling of it and by the description in the staff report, we had one of these plans in place. We're modifying it, but it wasn't quite clear to me how we're modifying it, presumably doing bigger and better things, I hope.
That's always the intent when we go through a strategic planning process or evaluate the use of our funds, yes. But this is for us to be in compliance as a designated local area with the state's flow-through requirements.
Okay. I'll take that conversation offline.
Okay.
sounds like we're headed in the right direction, though.
Okay. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks.
And with that, Mr. Meacham? Okay, moved by Supervisor Meacham, seconded by Supervisor Teixeira. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Will that include the amendment?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you all. Those of you who had items on the consent, we appreciate you being here. And we're going to move into public comment, where we do have quite a few folks that want to speak. So if there's anyone else who wants to speak in general public comment, items not on the agenda. If you want to speak on something not on the agenda, please get your slip in now. And just for time purposes, I see Chief Annibale has to run, so we'll call him first, and we'll get to something right after that. Chief?
Thank you. I appreciate being here today to recognize one of your board members for some work that he did with us. And since 1985, the Arroyo Grande Police Department canine program has been credited with tracking down criminals, rooting out drug stashes, and protecting officers throughout San Luis Obispo County. This canine program is one of the more respected programs in the state and has won numerous awards statewide for their work and their skills. The police canines have continued to impress citizens and service groups and school children with both their police talents, but also their easygoing demeanor. They're available to public safety and school district personnel throughout San Luis Obispo County, and Arroyo Grande's four-legged partners primarily serve the South County and the communities of Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, Oceano, Napomo, and the unincorporated San Luis Obispo County. However, these meticulously trained and highly trained and bred dogs do not come cheap. The cost of one dog, for example, is $8,500. And although the city does provide for their care while they're in service, every time the dog retires, the city and the police department must do a fundraising campaign to pay for the extensive training, certification, kennel, and, of course, the dog itself. Our 2010-11 fundraising goal was set at $50,000 for two dogs to be serving the South County area. And I have to recognize Supervisor Adam Hill was one of the first people to step forward to support this program and donating $1,000 to the cause, and more importantly, setting the example and the lead for our program, which led ultimately to raising the entire $50,000, and the two dogs are now in service. So on behalf of the Rio Grande Police Department and
open in our county, the county itself, the board giving direction to our administrator, and also we've had money, you know, so the board directed money to the Friends of Prado Day Center, the city of San Luis Obispo, the Friends of Prado, and some individual businessmen also in San Luis. And then we were also happy to find out that our PSA, our Deputy Sheriff's Association, our correctional officers contacted us, and they, in the spirit of generosity, wanted to contribute some money to help us with this effort. And, of course, the North County, where it's been even colder at some of these freezing times, have needed money, and we're happy to have with us two of our great correctional sergeants, one of them a new sergeant, which is really scary, as his bosses look at him. So they have a check to present to Ms. Salters and others representing ECHO. And if Mr. Thompson, Mr. Hendrickson, sergeants would come forward to the lectern to say a few words, and Ms. Salter, I'm sure, will be happy to accept this on behalf of ECHO. Why don't you go first, Mike?
Morning. Mike Thompson, President of the Deputy Sheriff Association. With me is Steve Hendrickson. He's the Sergeant of Arms of the Association. And we just saw it on the press of the need, and we took it to our membership, and we all voted to make a donation. So we're here today to make donate this check, $2,500.
Great. Tina?
My name is Tina Salter, and on behalf of ECHO, the El Camino Homeless Organization, I want to thank the Deputy Sheriff's Association, Correctional Deputies and Dispatchers Union, that's a long title, for their extremely generous donation. This is sort of like the third leg of the stool to keep our homeless people in the North County warm and safe and dry this winter, along with the Father's House Church, which has provided us with the venue, and then ECHO is going to manage it. And I just can't thank everybody who worked on this, and especially these gentlemen and their union for doing this. Thank you very much.
Great. Before you go away, we're going to have a comment for Supervisor Patterson and maybe a picture here before the board, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes.
Supervisor Patterson, we're going to milk all the good news we can at this time of year.
We can. Thank you, Chairman Hill. I just wanted to personally thank the DSA, Deputy Sheriff's Association, for contributing. ECHO, for those of you that don't know, is an all-volunteer program that serves the entire North County, inland area. They have an overnight emergency shelter that they operate in Atascadero. They've been doing that for 11 years, 365 days a year. They provide a meal, a bed, and breakfast for homeless in the North County. They were not able, because they're an all-volunteer organization, to actually open a warming shelter this year until the DSA stepped up with funding to cover the cost. They found an additional venue, and the two together have made this happen in the North County. We've had temperatures as low as 20 degrees so far this year, and I expect it'll get colder, and so the need is great in the North County, and I want to thank both ECHO and DSA for providing that service.
Let's get a quick photo with the board so we can send one to Tina, if you wouldn't mind standing between our two gentle. All right. These guys don't get to do this much, so we're milking. All right. Thank you so much. Good job, guys. Thank you, Tina. All right. How about John O'Connell, Toys for Tots, if you'd be so kind. I see some more good news coming forward, I think. More good people in our community helping.
Good morning. My name is John O'Connell. I'm representing the Toys for Tots Foundation. First of all, I'd like to wish you all a Merry Christmas, happy holiday season, and a very peaceful 2012. In the year 2000, the Toys for Tots Foundation allowed other entities than active Marines and organized Marine Corps reserve units to collect toys and be part of the Toys for Tots program. The Marine Corps League Detachment 680 of the Central Coast here stepped up to the plate and has been actively involved in that since. And under the leadership of people like Lou Barnes and the last several years has been the Board of Supervisors. We're extremely grateful for your generosity and your care. And as a small token of our appreciation, the Toys for Tots Foundation would like to present you with an award.
Great. Come on, folks. Oh, that's going to look great, man. Yeah, that's beautiful. Do you want to hold it and we'll get a quick picture with the board? That's really...
Thank you.
Okay. We will get that hung very soon. Thank you so much for all the work you do and General Walcott as well. We extend our gratitude for this. This is a great program providing toys for children throughout our county, and it's a beautiful, beautiful recognition for us. So thank you so much for being here. All right. This is the good news thing. Oh, I have to call attention to one more thing before we continue. A friend of mine loaned me a holiday tie because I did not own one. Mary Parker, who some of you know is one of the leaders of People's Kitchen, she made this holiday tie, which is extraordinary in its Christmas themes of various ways, but it didn't fit around my big neck, so I'm just showing it just to thank Mary. She's just loaning it to me. She made that clear, too. Anyway, let's go on. Eric Greening, followed by Tina Salter, please.
Eric Greening, sorry, we're going toward bad news right now, but as the facts around the Fukushima issue continue unfolding, the lessons for this county that we have yet to pick up on and plan for also continue unfolding. We have had drills about short-term nuclear emergencies with known limits to the areas contaminated. The Fukushima drama has dragged on for 9 months and likely will continue for years. Again and again, places, foodstuffs, or resources previously thought safe are being discovered as dangerous, and the pattern of unexpectedly leapfrogging hotspots repeatedly outdistances the predictions of those in charge. Today, I want to focus not on the places most contaminated or the people worst poisoned, but on the dilemma experienced in more marginal areas and situations, because our county could just as easily experience such situations. If we had, for example, when we find out that random hotspots keep appearing here and there in our cropland and grazing land from some kind of issue at the Diablo plant, who, if anyone, would compensate our agriculturalists? And from what funding source, and would compensation require documentation of a certain level of contamination, or would the inability to sell products due to the public perception also warrant compensation? The same issue arises, obviously, with our tourism industry. Our two biggest industries in this county, agriculture and tourism, could be completely on their knees, on their faces, simply as a result of perception issues, even if the actual contamination was spotty. And let's say if new data were to show that a town not evacuated probably should have been, its people are not acutely ill, but the longer they stay there, the greater the chance that they might become ill in the future. Who, if anyone, will help those who prudently decide to quit their jobs and move their families to protect their health? What if the people involved are county employees? What loyalty will you show in those circumstances? And if you help them get on their feet in some other place, from what source will you find the resources to do so? I could go on and on with situations we need to be planning for. I ask you to agendize an actual discussion early in 2012 so we can begin actually preparing for something besides just a short-term emergency. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Ms. Salter, followed by Julie Tacker, please.
Good morning. My name is Tina Salter, and here I have a different hat on. I'm going to pass out to each of you a calendar that is a cooperative effort between the Atascadero Mutual Water Company and the Atascadero Native Tree Association, and it's a community calendar called the Woodlands and Watershed Calendar. This is our 10th or 11th year doing this, and it has photographs this year. It had photographs last year, and it's a beauty. In particular, I'm interested in the status of the purchase of the Jacamazi site. To date, there's been no option on the property, to my knowledge, and I think the community of Los Osos set out to move its sewer, and I think we'd feel much more comfortable that that is indeed happening with a purchase agreement for that property. I'm also interested, very interested, in water conservation. A water conservation plan is required by your coastal development permit by the California Coastal Commission. Ideally, implementation would have started 20 years ago. That implementation is in your hands at this time. You are required by that permit to invest some $5 million in a water conservation plan. I'm a little concerned because today's later item doesn't have a financial breakdown of where we're at with the finances for the wastewater project, and I'm worried that you're not going to have enough money to front that plan and get some toilets, shower heads, et cetera, in the homes, get the water-saving devices in the homes of the community of Los Osos. With regard to the financing of the project, I haven't seen an economic impact study. I believe that with that data, you will be armed with better information that also will provide better opportunities for our community to access grants and other low-interest funding. These questions should be answered before you embark on your next agenda item, where you're going to spend some $7,600,000+. All of these items should have been loaded on your website. I come here not on a regular basis, but semi-regular, and every time I point to that website as a tool that you aren't using to its fullest extent, I'm disappointed. I constantly go there looking for the latest information, and only does it get there after I've asked Mr. Waddell where is something. My time is up, and I think it's premature to take on the next item.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Al Barrow, please.
Morning, Chairman Hill, Board, Sheriff, and Public. And DeFatta here for the bankrupt community of the Prohibition Zone of Los Osos. And with the systematic destroying of our people and businesses with more debt by Supervisor Gibson. Where to start from? It's all humbug with us. It's still in order here. High utility bills combined with the sewer bill and the hidden costs that Gibson or Ogren are hiding, newly revised numbers are at least 50% of property owners and renters will be saying adios to Los Osos. Nobody seems to be mentioning the business owners of this community and the tsunami effect that will definitely happen to most of the county. Shame on those two to cause a deep depression in this community that can be very easily avoided with a cheaper alternative sewer project. Shame on Gibson for making himself the biased judge and jury of this sewer project. Since the days of Noel King, when he said, gravity is what you're going to get, stop your bitching. The fix was in then, and we see it still now. Shame on Gibson for being added on the Diablo seismic study committee to steer, spin, and brainwash the other members because he knows that major seismic activity under the Los Osos liquefaction zone could alone kill his big project, Deep Trench Gravity Collection Project. Shame on Gibson for choosing Pablo Ogren, who from the start continued on with the most expensive sewer in the county, in the country, per capita, and used to work for the gravity contractor way back then. He should have recused himself. He and Waddell continued down the path for the gravity collection without even looking at other better affordable collection systems. Shame on Ogren for using his pillow talk house money to infiltrate the Los Osos CSD directors to spin and steer the other directors to stay with gravity and making critical decisions on the bankruptcy results, resulting in the painful destruction of our citizens. The best thing that happened to Los Osos is her resignation. Shame on this county with its in-house investigation of conflicts of interest, of cronies, conflicts of love affairs, and crimes without interviewing the public that has evidence of wrongdoing. A blue ribbon panel made up of citizens should oversee the county's administrators' findings and maybe even sit in on the interviews. And you know what? Maybe even oversee the district attorney's decision. It's fine that we have a grand jury, but they are powerless to enforce their findings. Many of our citizens cannot afford...
You gentlemen are weighing issues like costs, which are a burden, a tax that you're voting to put on people, that you need to consider all the elements of that budget for that household or that business. You have not done that. You have taken each item as a separate entity and viewed it from that point of view. You need a global point of view. You need an overall perspective of how this is going to happen. I've heard you talk over and over again. Even today, the Marine Corps talked about the difficult times that the economy is facing. And yet we're seeing rate increases in water all across the board. The privatization of public utilities has cost more money, not less money. No offense to Mr. Brown of ProLab, but you know, it's a fact. There's certain areas that we always wanted to have the goal of making housing affordable. We have the most unaffordable housing stock and the lowest wages across the county. It's just incredible, $10 an hour. And the per room cost is right around $600 a room to rent. So you have not considered this. So renters are paying increasingly a larger percentage for their housing. How can they afford all the things that are coming their way? And the next item, which has to do with the Los Osos sewer, shows, you know, more spending, more burden on the public. And, you know, I know that Mr. Gibson owns plenty. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He has plenty of money. And, you know, he can afford whatever, but he's got his own well. He's got his own septic system. He's completely insulated from that. But the millions of people in this county are facing high budgetary expenses from their utilities costs. We haven't even looked beyond water and wastewater. How about gas, electric, and so on? Please consider that. We need an affordability study. Thank you.
Ms. Owen, followed by Richard Margeson, please.
Good morning, Lindy Owen. From the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos, I wanted to remind everybody, I guess we all had to do it, but taxes were due yesterday, property taxes. The first installment on this not-so-shovel-ready sewer project came forward, and it is noted as a repayment for the USDA loan. The problem is this loan appears to be committed but not signed, and I would like Mr. Gibson to please address this. If this is not a confirmed loan and it's not solid, the taxation, I believe, is a fraud and should not have been put on our tax bills this year yet. If anybody could look into that, I would appreciate it. It could be 5,000 counts of fraud. And then this morning, Paul Krugman, economist, top economist in the world, he says that our economy is going into a depression. Others say that we're going into a second recession. The writing is on the wall. The country is falling into very hard times, as you all have heard over and over again. To homeowners that are stuck in the red line area called the prohibition zone, $740 for the current proposed sewer and $320 for the past proposed mess is being taxed out of our annual budget. That amounts to $1,000 per year per home times 5,000 homes. That's $5 million annually that have left the economy in the county here. That's $5 million that people will not be able to spend in small businesses, in restaurants, theaters, coffee shops, hair salons, on and on and on. Many people will go without medical care. They will be cutting back on all of those things. That $1,000 annual amount is just the beginning of what you're proposing for this sewer that is so out of control. What can you do? You five have the opportunity and really the responsibility of stopping this project, taking a reevaluation. Regional Water Quality Control Board said it's up to you to come back to them to downsize the project and do a phased project. I believe, considering all the information on earthquake dangers and the liquefaction that we have in Los Osos, as well as the fact that we could do a phased system and probably collect more nitrates and have a better result in the end for one-fifth the cost, at this time, this is the appropriate behavior for you to take on. And I would ask our supervisor to please, please, please take a look at what you're doing to a community and to this county and step forward and let's redesign this project and downsize it for these times. Thank you.
Slides talked about the affordability issue, water conservation, progress on the project. No information on how this project and the cost of this project would affect different categories of individuals in the community. No compassion, no stories, no advocacy for what is going to destroy the business district of this community and many of the lives of those with less means to pay for it. I was given my public comment opportunity. I threw out some scenarios that the board could consider. When it came back to the board, they actually advocated for one of them, as a 1% interest rate, one of the board members. It didn't go anywhere. It ended up not going anywhere. But on an issue of this magnitude, to not have rallied the community of Los Osos, I'm wondering when somebody on this board is going to stand up and advocate for this community. Mr. Patterson, you got contributions in the last campaign from Los Osos. I know you did. Mr. Hill, you're a champion for the homeless. You were on the food bank board. Mr. Teixeira, I haven't heard a whole lot from you on the Los Osos issue, so I don't know where you stand. And Mr. Meacham, I know you have it in you, and I'm still waiting for you to take your shoe off and bang it on the dais and say enough is enough. When is somebody going to advocate for this community? When? I drove 10 hours to give a 7-minute comment, and my advocacy was better than what came from our own staff and supervisors.
Okay. That will do it for public comment. We will get into board business. And Madam Clerk, if you would be so kind to introduce the first item, please.
Item number 30, a request to approve an agreement for professional engineering services with HDR Engineering for $7,686,295. Sorry, I said that wrong. For the Los Osos Wastewater Project, Los Osos, California.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Waddell?
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. I have a brief presentation on this item, and I'll get right into it if we can have it up, please. So I did want to start with a brief status update on the project. The first four items are items that are in progress and will actually have action items coming to your board in the near future. On the collection system, the design is moving forward on schedule. We expect to have the final design in January. The goal is for going out to bid in March and having contracts by May. The timing of actually releasing the contracts for bidding is somewhat dependent on the other agencies, our funding agencies, USDA and State Water Board, as well as the Coastal Commission, who all have a requirement to review the final plans before approval, and then we'll be taking it to your board. On the treatment facility, we're completing the scope for preparing the design build documents. That would be the preliminary design and the request for qualifications and request for proposals. We also expect to bring that back to your board for consideration for approval soon. And on the water conservation program, we have submitted a draft plan to the Coastal Commission along with the overall recycled water management plan that's required by their permit conditions. We're awaiting comments from the Coastal Commission on the conservation plan, and then we'll be developing a final plan with implementation details that we'd be bringing to your board for consideration for approval, and the target for that is February, and to meet our coastal permit condition requirements to have the implementation of the plan by mid-March. On the Midtown site, we're completing the final design and bid package with our consultant and our design division, and we expect to be bringing that to your board very soon to be putting that to bid for restoring that site. And finally, we did go to the State Water Board last week, and they did reduce the interest rate on their portion of the loan to 2%. Brings the project cost down about $4 a month, which, well, that may not sound like a lot. It is about $6 million in interest savings over the life of the loan, and if we were to get a grant that would have a similar reduction in cost, it'd be about a $5 million grant. So, that's, again, a significant construction management as well as architectural engineering and design firm. They, especially in focusing on construction and construction management, they have extensive pipeline and sewer experience on large, complicated projects, including the key staff that are going to be a part of this project. Some of their recent other agency clients have been San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, Sacramento Regional Sanitation District, Santa Cruz County. The unique thing about their team that they put together is that while HDR is a national firm, their team is primarily comprised of local staff, both from HDR and with the subconsultants. All of their key subs and staff are based in San Luis County. And I'll be getting into that a little bit more in a later slide, but this will allow them to be extremely responsive to project needs. But to touch on the scope of work for this agreement, one of the key things is the pre-construction evaluation of the plans and specs and bidding strategy. It's called a constructability review, where their team of experts will review the plans and specs, recommend cost-saving strategies and improvements, specifically looking at one of the key areas, for example, would be in risk allocations and some of the detailed specifications and in a goal of bringing bids in at a lower price, also avoiding potential conflicts during construction. Part of the contract administration is ensuring that the contractors are following the specifications and also the environmental and funding agency conditions, which are key on any project and especially on this project. The inspection, testing, and staking, that's kind of your traditional construction management role. On the electronic document management on this project, we've required, which is what is an industry standard on large projects, which is a web-based paperless document management system that allows document sharing in real time of submittals, requests for information, and other project-related items. It allows for efficient and detailed tracking of response times, of claims, and it allows all the participants to be able to share those documents, and it can be set up with different levels of access for both for the county, for the funding agencies, construction manager, contractors, and the subs suppliers. And so it really creates an efficient method of getting through all of that administration on the project. And finally, a key item in this scope is a public information program, which will include a community liaison and daily project updates. And this information program is not a PR campaign. It's designed to keep the public regularly informed during construction, so that they have consistent, regular, daily updated information through a number of venues: a website, print media, mailers, social media, radio, message boards. And the goal is really that the residents and motorists can have up-to-date information when they need it, whether they're coming home from work and wondering about traffic impacts, if they're planning an outing, planning an event. And so that is a key part of this project, is recognizing the potential impacts to the community and the neighborhoods, business districts, all over Los Osos. Focusing on the team that is proposed, the construction manager is Jim Brantley, and he's in the audience today, and he plans to introduce himself during public comment. But he's with HDR. He has over 30 years of construction experience. Spent most of his career with the Department of Water Resources. And, for example, he was the assistant construction manager on the State Water Project when it came through our county about 15 years ago. The resident engineers, or in this agreement language, the resident project representatives, include Rob Carnes, who is a local independent engineering consultant. He has over 20 years' experience, and he was an RE on the 2005 project, so he has firsthand experience of the construction situation in Los Osos. And Brad Therian has over 30 years' experience, and primarily on public works construction projects. The inspectors are made up of joint staff from HDR and a local engineering firm MNS. So we'll be able to utilize local staff for efficiency and responsiveness. The materials testing team is made up of surveying. Surveying is another local firm, MBS Survey, which is Mike Stanton, a local surveyor who did the survey and construction staking again on the 2005 project. So he has firsthand knowledge of the survey data in Los Osos. The materials testing is made up of a team of both Fugro and Earth Systems, which really are the two local service providers who do that type of work. So they are estimated in the proposal, which originally was $7.6 million, down to $6.9 million of their base fee. A large part of this came from their agreement to reduce the standard subconsultant markup from 10% to 5%. And then also working with their project manager, just identifying critical staff and workloads, identifying more efficient approaches to staffing, utilizing local staff more efficiently, which will reduce its costs, for example, by reducing travel costs and per diem costs. And then also planning the staffing, on an as-needed basis for the project, especially at startup and wrap-up, that we don't have extra staff out there who are not working efficiently and are underutilized. So all those things resulted in a pretty significant reduction in the estimate. And so to conclude, the recommended action for today is approval of this agreement. It is a reasonable scope and fee estimate for a project of this size. Comparing to industry standards, it's under 10% of the estimated construction costs. In analyzing the proposals that we received, the hourly rates for this team are at the low end of the hourly rates of the other proposers. And while it is a significant amount, it's this large effort is necessary for a project of this size when we're looking at the entire community's installing pipelines over the entire community over over approximately 2 years. This level of construction management is necessary in order to successfully complete that construction. That concludes my presentation. I'm available for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Waddell. We do have some questions, beginning with Supervisor Patterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Waddell, thank you for that update. A comment and a question. First being, I did take the opportunity to scroll through the proposal and was impressed by the personnel that HDR is using. As you mentioned, a lot of local people as well as local firms will be engaged in this process, many of whom we know from other work they've done for the county and on other projects. So there's a lot of local experience involved, and I think that's a good thing for this project. Also, I'm curious about their public information program. You did speak a little bit about what they would be doing during the actual construction of the wastewater system. When can we expect them to begin? When will the public start getting information about the status of the project? Will that be when they break ground, or will there be information disseminated to the public prior to that?
We will be starting that public outreach prior to construction because we do want the community to know what to expect when things are starting. We do plan to have public meetings leading up to construction, town hall type meetings. Once we have bids and have contractors on board and get their construction schedules, then we really will have a better idea because, the contractors are going to have some flexibility on exactly which street they want to start on first. Mm-hmm. But prior to construction, there is still a window from when we get that information until we actually start construction. So it's going to be coming out in a whole progression. So that's one of the first tasks when, assuming HDR is the agreement is approved, is to develop that program with HDR and their team and schedule it and start the outreach.
Very good. Thank you.
And if I could just jump in, Mr. Chairman, with Mr. Meacham's indulgence, the public outreach is going to start next month. We have our folks involved in our road issues who are going to be conducting neighborhood meetings to, brief people on what's coming and also get their suggestions on what special needs and special projects might need to be accomplished in specific areas. So the project team is well ahead of the curve on the public issues. Thank you, Mr. Meacham.
Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you. John, is this scope of work, does it include the value engineering? Is that what we're looking at from as far as?
Yes. The term value engineering is a little bit different, but this, in a sense, does. It's called the constructability review, where they review the plans and specs and make recommendations for cost-saving improvements. It's a value engineering would typically happen early in the design at like a 30% level. I mean, it could look at entire changes in the scope of the project. And we're not at that point. Our scope has been defined for a number of years since we received our coastal permit. But this then is looking at the until we give them the authorization, and that's actually in the agreement also. They need a written authorization before they proceed with each phase.
Okay. And I hate to ask this, but I'm going to anyway, because we keep hearing a lot about affordability. Mm-hmm. And at what point are we required to, or has there been, and if not, will there be an affordability study done relative to the cost of this project to the people of Los Osos?
Well, we've done
I know we've done
a lot of affordability analysis, and our analysis shows what the project costs as a relation to a number of metrics like median household income on an annual basis, on a monthly basis. We presented those. Those have been helpful in our pursuing financial assistance. We've received almost $20 million in grants. We've received extended and low-interest financing. Each funding agency has their own requirements for what an affordability analysis is. There is no one standard. And we also don't have, we're implementing this project as a result of a mandate from the state. And so, it's a requirement.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meacham. No further questions from the board. Then we'll open it up to the public, please. And we'll start with, and please get your slips in if you do want to speak. Appreciate that. We'll start with Mr. Brantley, James Brantley, and follow that with Mr. Barrow, Al Barrow.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. My name is Jim Brantley. Live in Arroyo Grande and lived here in the county about 17 years. I'm with HDR Engineering, and I will be the on-site construction manager leading our team through this project. Just wanted to express my excitement and commitment from myself and HDR Engineering for the opportunity to serve the county and successfully deliver this project on time and on budget. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Brantley. It's good to have you here. Mr. Barrow, I see you setting things up. Are you ready, or do you want me to go to the next speaker while you
get you?
Okay, and followed by Mr. Weimer. Keith Weimer, please. Keith, you want to come up? And are you ready, Al?
Yep.
Okay, so Mr. Weimer, if you wouldn't mind going and let Al get his computer stuff set up, we'd appreciate that.
My name is Keith Weimer, La Sosa Sustainability Group. We request that you do not approve this management contract until the issues I cover below are fully vetted. First, we have recently learned that the claim that the project is vital to the protection of the Morro Bay National Estuary is not true. The only study cited in the waste discharge requirement to support this claim, the Kitts DNA study, shows the project will reduce pollution of the estuary by only a fraction of a percent. The project's benefit on the National Estuary is justification for the federal funding and a main reason for the Coastal Commission approval. This issue must be resolved before this project goes any further. Second, we recently learned the project will not mitigate for adverse impacts on seawater intrusion. The critical seawater intrusion problem continues to destroy the basin at a rapid rate, despite over a 25% reduction in pumping in the past 6 years. Conservation is the most effective mitigation for the project's impacts on seawater intrusion, so the project could destroy the basin. The community should not be forced to spend $190 million to reduce nitrates in a few wells when we may have to spend millions on imported water. Third, we learned the LOSCSD is applying for a grant to treat nitrates at a cost of about $600,000 for 150 acre-feet of water. This and other evidence shows all the water pumped from the upper aquifer, the focus of the project, could be treated for under $8 million, less than 1/20th of the cost of this project. Fourth, evidence shows nitrates have stabilized in the shallow test wells just over drinking water standards. The project will drastically reduce water levels in these wells in Zone A. Private well owners use this water, and purveyors were considering it for landscaping and crops. Therefore, the project reduces the water supply rather than increases it. Finally, we learned local water purveyors plan to raise water rates over 40% to implement necessary measures to address seawater intrusion, shifts in pumping, nitrate treatment, and conservation. These measures won't be affordable with sewer costs of $170 to $350 or more. Ask yourself what the LOWWP does for $190 million. It doesn't protect the estuary or increase the water supply. It could make seawater intrusion worse. We request you do not allocate $7.5 million until these facts are fully vetted. We are sure you will...
...the analysis of emergent information of significant concern regarding this project. Specifically, for instance, the CSD is applying for a $600,000 grant for the purchase of a denitrification unit, and Golden State has already promised delivery of a unit to Los Osos of their own. So, in effect, the justification for a project to address nitrates is not only redundant, but an insane waste of public funds that might actually be used to correct real needs in state and nationwide infrastructure problems. Not only is equipment available to address nitrates at a fraction of the project cost, 1/20th to be fairly precise, this equipment will be used even with a project, adding yet more cost to ratepayers. Mr. Gibson has stated that the project will improve seawater intrusion and is apparently still entertaining a second to 18 to allow build-out. But build-out will only be possible if seawater intrusion is stopped. The fact is, the CSD has consistently reduced production by at least 25% over the last 5 years, and figures from the November utility report show even more reduction. Yet seawater intrusion continues to advance at an extremely rapid rate. The Midtown Palisades well is currently at 398 milligrams per liter, up from 360 in 2009, and dramatically up from only 60 milligrams per liter in 2000. 500 milligrams per liter is undrinkable. Or is the final solution, in fact, to be imported water, which, of course, absolutely negates the need for a project? The third prong of the machine driving this project is pollution to the estuary. After numerous inquiries and public information requests to you and the water boards for proof of pollution, we found no document that confirms any test results showing said pollution. The only evidence offered is a kit study commissioned by the water board to study the viability of oyster beds. Careful analysis of KITS data, in fact, clearly shows that only a fraction of 1% of the total coliform load in the estuary can be attributed to a human source, and even that is not confirmed from septic source. This simply cannot be a gross misinterpretation of this study, but frankly appears to be calculated misinformation. These are critical issues. Why pay for a project that accomplishes nothing? It doesn't improve nitrates, it doesn't address seawater intrusion, and it can't improve the estuary.
Thank you, Ms. Watson.
Thank you.
Mr. Greening? Mr. Barrow, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go with Mr. Barrow, then we'll go with Mr. Greening. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you very much for your patience. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. On the screen, you see a picture of a lift station that has endured an earthquake in a liquefaction zone similar to what Los Osos is. That lift station was 5 meters below its present status. In other words, it was 30 feet below the grade. How is the project management, the engineers, the whole army that you're spending $200 million on, going to prevent this kind of damage in this particular kind of technology? It will not. It just won't. If you read the, if you read underneath, it says, vertically uplifted, laterally dislocated, approximately 5 meters, sewer pump station, caisson, in Christchurch, New Zealand, February 22nd, 2011, a 6.1 South Island earthquake. All of our faults are 6.8 or better. Los Osos fault is 6.8. The shoreline fault and the Hosgree faults are 7.5. There's ongoing seismic testing right now in Los Osos by PG&E over concerns about these faults. This is the wrong project for this environment. Having liquefaction conditions throughout, high groundwater, and certainly everywhere around the bay is going to be high groundwater, and you're going to be flowing, your slopes are going to come from South Bay Boulevard from the east to the west down by the bay. You're going to run into immense dewatering problems in addition to the construction problems. Once an earthquake occurs, you will lose the slopes. If I could just show you, this is a pipe. If you can show me, this pipe is supposed to be level. Okay, when it's level, it doesn't flow any liquids. It has to have a slope. So a gravel gradual slope during an earthquake, then this contract is not the right contract from our end or from their end. The next couple of pages, you look at the issues that they will be dealing with, the list of issues. One, of course, relative to traffic control is ensuring the viability of public transit. One huge area that is absolutely missing is cultural resource protection. We are talking about an area of very rich cultural resources that has been inhabited for at least 10,000 years. The possibility, that means there's a possibility of encountering things at any depth, even though you don't see surface features. When you go to page 30-22 and 23, the list of key sub-consultants, again, I see no one who is prepared to cope with these huge cultural resources issues. I see no program or plan for consultation on an ongoing basis with native people during this design. This is absolutely huge. This would be a huge violation of SB 18, among other things. It would certainly put the county in a strong legally scary position, and people all over the county would be paying for oversights. Then we get to the further fleshing out of the qualifications of the people. There are a lot of people with a lot of qualifications. Not only do I not see cultural resources, I see some other issues that I'm not sure are on the positive side. Mr. Brantley's experience with the coastal branch of the State Water Project, has there ever been a written-up documentation of the success of the tree mitigation? What a lot of us saw through the North County was a proliferation of pink planting tubes that gradually decayed and blew away. We didn't see the trees. Is there anywhere a document we can check to actually see the success of that biological mitigation? When we're talking about doing a project in a coastal ESHA that is of major significance for endemic species, both flora and fauna, we need to know that we've got the right people to handle biology as well as cultural resources. Many other issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Tacker, followed by Jeff Edwards, please.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. I first want to thank Richard Margetson for going to the State Water Resources Control Board and representing my community. Secondly, I want to concur that I think it is premature to consider this item at this time. There is no rush. You do not have a time schedule order from the Regional Water Quality Control Board telling you you must meet any kind of deadline. As a 40-year resident, in all my years and close attention to the project, I must have missed the proclamation and the resolution that made Walnut Creek the sister city to Los Osos. This is where all Los Osos money is to go. Walnut Creek, where CDM, MWH, and what are these guys? HDR. I affectionately call them CDMWHDR. These engineers have had their hand out too long. HDR is two floors down in the same building as Montgomery Watson Harza. This document, this proposal, is a who's who of engineers, and all it speaks to their experience with the last project. This gives me no confidence. The last project was a failure. It's infeasible by the words of your own public works staff. The last project, we want to distance ourselves from the last project. Let me help your clerk. It's a $7,686,295 million contract that we're talking about today. And I just want to say Merry Christmas, Mr. Brantley. You kind of look a little like Santa Claus. I want to see the other proposals from the other engineering firms. I didn't find those on your website. I see that reimbursables
I didn't find a cap. Reimbursables will be billed to the project outside of this $7,600,000, plus 10%. Meals, travel, rental on offices, all of this is outside. This contract gives us no pipes, no pumps, no properties, no permits, nothing tangible.
Your Public Works Department has engaged in a pattern of overpayment and fat contracts. The list is long. Just as a short reminder, Brandman & Associates, they prepared the environmental document, over $2 million. You've given CDM a contract for $5 million. With these folks, at 7 plus, you're at $12 million just for the Walnut Creek guys. These are all soft costs. No construction. And just to put that in perspective, to date, so over $60 million has been spent on this project. $60 million. With this contract, it'll run your most recent total to $22 million approximately. If you do the math, the soft costs on this project are 34%. That's staggering. That's money that's not on the ground improvements. This is ridiculous how this money continue to get spent. We have less than a mile of pipeline in the ground right now for that $60+ million. Total collection is 45 miles. So you got about 1% in the ground right now. We've heard a little bit about seawater intrusion, but not nearly enough. That's the problem. That's why we're even moving forward with the wastewater project. Not nitrates, seawater intrusion. That's why we're doing this project, yet it's an afterthought. It's left to the ISJ partners. It's mind-boggling. The Coastal Commission condition compliance, I've heard very little about that. I'll bet you that you don't even get condition compliance by next year, let alone start construction. Let's mark that down. Your Clean Water State Revolving Fund loan was reduced to 2% from 2.6. In talking to staff, their board is willing to consider a further reduction. There was one vote on the three-member panel for 1%. And I'm told that could be revisited. Yes, yet we don't hear anything about that. We'd like the $86 million at 1% instead of 2. It just makes sense. That could help make it affordable. Thanks for your time.
Ms. Owen, followed by Chuck Cicina, please.
Lindy Owen, stuck in the prohibition zone, unfortunately. I wanted to speak. I do wish that you would hold off on approving this completely until there is more oversight into what we're getting for that amount of money. The $22 million bridge loan will be pretty much used up by approving this contract today. And I'm sure there are some other needs, and I'd like to ask where the next batch of money is supposed to come from. We've already heard how much has been spent. This seems to be the 1% of public works, if you were talking about a takeover. The feeding trough is pretty much what I see repeated over and over and again from years before with Montgomery Watson Harza at the lead. And it's shameful that the five of you can sit up there and continue to act like this project is just hunky-dory and saltwater intrusion is just an invention that, you know, us seven or eight annoying people come to talk about every week, and that earthquakes don't happen on the coast of California, that liquefaction really doesn't happen in Los Osos, and that you could go ahead and approve a project that is $200 million, and yes, it will run 40% over on the cost. Mr. Meacham is absolutely right. This project is the project from hell. And rather than do anything to propose that we do a phased project that would address low-lying areas, that would use piping that does not break during an earthquake, and when it leaks, it's not raw sewage leaking into a water supply, it's pre-treated effluent. Now, we have the opportunity to do something to say this project is not affordable and it's not safe. You five could do it. Mr. Bruce Gibson, I will exclude because he has certainly taken a part in being a good friend to Montgomery Watson Harza and to all the other people at Walnut Creek. and so has Mr. Pavel Ogren, because they are not doing what the public was asked, they were commissioned to do for the public, which was to get the most affordable system. That system was the pressurized step system, only by a few thousand, but it was less expensive, and it certainly is the superior method to be dealing with in the situation that we're dealing with. This is not North Dakota. This is Los Osos on the coast in a liquefaction zone, and putting out $7 million more right now for something that needs to be stopped and readdressed is ludicrous. I ask you to please not approve this. Give it more time. We don't need to rush into this part of the project until we find out when the project actually gets caught up with itself. Thank you.
Mr. Cicino, followed by Richard Margetson, please.
Good morning, Board. My name's Chuck Cicino, Los Osos resident. Where do we spend? Broderson recharge is speculative and will amount to about half of what you take away with the leach fields anyway. So we're inviting saltwater intrusion into the upper aquifer. What's your plan for water after that's done? Nacimiento Lake? Your plan 218 for undeveloped properties is no development guarantee. You have to have water, according to the Coastal Commission, not just a sewer for people to hook up to. Nitrates as an excuse for the project doesn't really pass scrutiny. They're pretty marginal out there. Is it bacteria from the septic tanks or seeps? As the KIT study showed, 1% of the fecal coliform that enters the bay that they could measure, they didn't measure the direct inputs. The creeks provide 100 times more fecal coliform into the bay than the groundwater seeps. And the groundwater seeps aren't tied to a septic tank. There was a homeless encampment near the Pismo seep. And the DNA fingerprinting was one person over and over again. You either have one person living in a house by themselves with a failing septic tank, or that's that homeless encampment. So we're going to spend $189 million to cure 1% of the fecal coliform load into the bay. What are we going to spend on the other 99%? This isn't 1983. It's not 2005. It's not 98. Whenever all the significant events happened, it's 2011. Saltwater intrusion is the problem. You're spending money on the wrong problem and spending it with the same old cronies. Wow.
Mr. Margetson, followed by Ben DeFatta, please.
Richard Margetson. That was a member of the recall, or that was became a member of the board after the recall, and was also reelected by the community that you just heard from. So he, at one point, he had a majority of the community support. I still think he does. $750,000 reduction through negotiations. We're going to give them a proclamation. But it's interesting that the contingencies for the project, $794,000. It's easy to work the numbers, guys. Economic impact report, Mr. Meacham. We've asked for that for 8 years. The powers that be don't want to know what's in that economic impact report. And I have some expertise in this area. Economic impact reports that are done for major city projects sometimes are 400, 500 pages thick. They give you catchphrases to use. They give you a document to go to the water board. And instead of putting up slides last week that most of the board members didn't understand and asked for clarification and then still didn't understand, would have given examples of how this project is going to affect the community. And what spurred the interest from one of the board members to open the discussion about a 1% interest rate was my comment that more than 95% of the payments for this project completely leave the community. Doesn't get recycled into the economic fabric of the community and the surrounding communities. It completely leaves the county. An economic impact report would have given in-depth analysis that you could have used. The project right now on the tax bills, almost $970. It's the $754 that you just approved plus the cost of the old project, and that has to be included because you just absorbed the Tri-W site and the Broderson site, and you've been using every report that was ever produced to do your EIR, your rough screening report, your fine screening report, and all these wonderful documents that got awards. You're at $81 a month now, and that doesn't even include the rates and charges or the cost of the SRF financing.
Thank you, Mr. Morgenson. Mr. DeFatta?
Hey, Mr. What's your name again?
Mr. DeFatta?
Ben DeFatta here again. Just got a bunch of scribble notes, and sure enough, you've heard from far better speakers than me. I'd like to call them the gang from Walnut Creek. I'm asking you, do not spend the $7.6 million, any more money on this project, this gravity project. Through your head, can't you? Now that Mr. Gibson is on the committee, he's able to steer just like Pablo Ogren over there steered with his bedroom bunny rabbit, whatever she was. Cronyism is alive here again, maybe even corruption. Show us your all bright common sense, people. Don't pass this agreement. Like I say, better speakers than I have said everything that you guys should need to know not to pass this project. Where is your compassion for half the community in the prohibition zone? Sirs, where is your compassion?
And that'll close it for public comment. Bring it back to the board. Mr. Gibson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listening to public comment today, much of what we heard in public comment really isn't relevant to the specific decision before us on this contract, and a good fraction of that comment was incorrect in one fashion or another. I don't think it's needed to carry on the rectification of that. It does strike me that...
Please shout from the audience. No one interrupted you when you spoke. Thank you.
It particularly does strike me that there are voices calling for further delay, and in fact some calling into question the need for the project. That sort of denial really, to me, indicates a significant disconnect from the reality of where we are in the process here. Of the issues raised, though, there are a couple that I would like to ask staff to comment on. One, there was a considerable concern about the amount of soft costs of this project, the environmental review, this construction management contract, and I'd ask Mr. Waddell whether the soft costs, as we're seeing them come to specific numbers, are they within the budget that we have set for this project?
Yes, Mr. Gibson, they are. With the soft costs are within our overall project budget, and if I may, just kind of address a specific comment related to the interim financing, the $22 million pre-construction loan. The vast majority, probably about 95% of the cost of this agreement, are not budgeted for the interim. They're budgeted for the construction period and as part of the overall loan. So, it's those kind of the loans and are really a cash flow issue. This agreement and the cash flow within this agreement are within our budgets, both for pre-construction and for the overall project.
Okay. The other question that was raised that I think deserves some comment is, we do know there are significant biological and cultural resource issues out there. And can you speak to the role of the construction manager in the environmental issues of making sure that we're properly treating those important resources and complying with conditions?
Yes. So the construction manager is responsible for monitoring the contractors and ensuring that the contractors are following provisions in their construction contracts related to mitigation measures and protection of environmental and cultural resources. But the actual monitors for cultural resources and biological and even the revegetation and restoration of the land after construction are all separate from this agreement. Those are all going to be managed by our in-house county environmental staff, and we'll be doing separate RFPs and agreements for those. In some cases, if it's if it makes sense, we may assign those to the construction manager, so then they'd be working as a sub under them, but we're not anticipating that right now. We're anticipating actually having our staff manage the agreements, and our staff do some of the monitoring because they know the community, they know the issues, they have relationships with the resource agencies, and so it's an entirely separate process.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you have questions. I'm ready with comments and a motion here if we don't.
I do. Mr. Meacham?
John, in regard to, I just tried to quickly read over this information that was presented to us by Mr. Weimer. How does this contract, if this contract proceeds, how does it relate to the concerns that have been expressed here, and can these concerns that have been expressed be incorporated as we go, or is this a totally separate issue?
Well, I have not had time to go through Mr. Weimer's submission, but this kit study, it is a totally separate issue. I mean, this really relates to the reasons for the wastewater project. The agreement today is for management of the construction portion of the wastewater project. It would be unrelated.
So none of these items that have
nitrates and test wells, not related. And finally, water rates also would not be related to this agreement.
Okay, well, just a comment. I'm going to support this basically because it's in the budget to look at this. And from what I understand, this is a time and material effort so that way as we progress through this. But I'm going to say now that when these construction costs come in, when we start seeing the bids, they better be significantly lower or I won't support it.
Please, thank you. Mr. Gibson?
Mr. Chairman, if I could speak to at least one. Mr. Waddell ran quickly through Mr. Weimer's 5 points there. The second one is Mr. Weimer suggesting the project will not mitigate for the adverse impacts of seawater intrusion. That's just plainly not correct. We've been through that a number of times in terms of the mitigation factors, that are obtained by the nature of the disposal part of this project. The whole attempt to divert attention toward nitrates in the water supply is also a bit of a canard. The State Water Board, the Regional Water Board, actually made it very clear. They have solid evidence of the fact that septic tanks pollute the groundwater of the Los Osos groundwater basin. Whether nitrate levels are at one level or another, the pollution is still occurring, and there is no right to pollute the groundwater. So the question of whether the treatment of nitrates is an issue is absolutely irrelevant. On a more positive note, I did look through the proposal that was submitted by HDR, and I was struck by the fact that they get the issues on this project, and I think notably their constructability review is going to be extremely important, and I think it will be a significant factor in mitigating the overall bid costs. And they also understand the significant logistical disruption the project's going to cause to the community, and I think they have a very solid approach to mitigating that. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will move staff's recommendation on this item.
I'll second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. If there's no further comment from my colleagues, a roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira? And Mr. Hill?
Yes. We're going to take a 15-minute break, be back at 11:15. Okay, thank you. We're back at the Board of Supervisors here, and Madam Clerk, would you be so kind as to introduce our next item?
Item 31, a discussion of the budget for the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District as a prelude to the 2012 program priority discussion.
Okay, I see Mr. Ogren.
Chairman Hill, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, your Public Works Director. Today's item is to provide a general overview of the Flood Control District budget. We don't have any funding recommendations at this time on any program development or any project specifically. Instead, what I want to do is just to provide a general budget overview, get some feedback from board members on where you may see some priorities coming down the road. But again, just to sort of do an overall budget review as a prelude to what we anticipate will be a number of strategy discussions with your board in 2012. So I have about 11 different slides that I'm going to be running through as I walk through this. In summary, I'm going to talk about both district operations and what we refer to as zones of benefits. Not all of the district's budgets are associated with the zone. The district overall has 14 different budget units. Some of those are enterprise funds. Some of them are zones. I've got a map to provide a little bit more illustration. But I'm not going to go into all of the details of the various operations, focusing in on tax revenues and district reserves, especially to the extent that they're discretionary funding sources for your board's decision-making. Just like the county's budget overall, a portion of the county's budget is discretionary funding available for your board, and some of the funding that is incorporated into your county budget is mandated or otherwise non-discretionary. So there's a bit of an analogy there. And, of course, also discuss a little bit about what the future holds. And in the front row, of course, we have Mr. Benedix, our Utilities Division Manager, Courtney Howard, who is our Senior Engineer for Water Resources. And much of the issues or strategy discussions in 2012 will actually be led by Ms. Howard. And then Carolyn Berg, who is an assistant to Courtney in our Water Resources work. And Mr. Hutchinson is also here, as well as representatives of some of the other local agencies who will probably be speaking at least a little bit today. So the focus is going to be on district tax revenues, discretionary tax. In the 70s Master Water Plan that was updated in the 80s and updated in the 90s, had identified projects such as the State Water Project and the Nacimiento Water Project, but much of that prior Master Water Plan had either been completed or projects had, are no longer feasible. And so this draft Master Water Plan is something that Courtney will bring to your board for discussions, and has already gone through a lot of public comment. The Integrated Regional Water Management Plan is how we bring together our master water plan with the work efforts of other agencies and integrating them into five major components, including water supply, flood control, ecosystems restoration, and a couple of other items. And it's certainly the cornerstone of grant requests, as well as a component of the state's water plan. The whole IRWM process itself is sort of the state's model for moving forward into the future. Also, Zone 1 and 1A and the long-range planning will continue to be on our minds and strategies. We met with some of the agricultural community in Rio Grande, off of Rio Grande Creek last week, and had some discussions after your board's action on the potential manual breaching of the South Levee in the event of an emergency situation. And so turning from Metal Creek and some of the Rio Grande Creek maintenance issues, we're going to have to start talking about some of the long-range planning as well with Zone 1 and 1A. Overall, creek maintenance policy discussions will come up because this in respect is we're getting a lot of public inquiries and feedback from advisory committees. Currently, I'm working with the Templeton Advisory Committee along with Dave Flynn in order to look at flooding and drainage issues in Templeton. Certainly, there's Napomo Creek is forefront on many people's minds, and part of the creek maintenance issues draws from the fact that we have to be more careful in terms of cleaning out creeks, what we may or may not be able to do. Certainly, the community of Santa Margarita has been our local leader in volunteer efforts getting in there and cleaning out creeks in advance of the winter storm in order to reduce flood likelihood. And in 2012, when we talk more about creek maintenance and the changing environmental regulations and what we need to tackle, this will be a specific area where partnering with the resource conservation districts and other conservation organizations is something that I think is going to have a lot of opportunity. Now, I see some of the RCD representatives are here today. I think there's opportunities there because certainly the RCDs can be very efficient and effective in helping us obtain permits, organizing volunteer efforts, and getting resources in there to do creek maintenance and vegetation removal, especially in areas which are not legally county responsibilities, but which we have the overall community responsibility of trying to help address flooding issues. So creek maintenance policies will certainly be coming up. And then last on this bullet list is the Los Osos Wastewater Project Reserve requirement. As part of the state revolving fund requirements, they have are requiring that the county put up an annual debt service reserve equal to about 1 year's worth of debt service. Currently, we're estimating that about $3 million, but we think that there's a good likelihood that that dollar amount is actually going to be significantly lower. And so I'll talk about that reserve requirement in the context of what I can see is some of the reserves that are available for your board and how establishing that reserve requirement through the flood control district and then drawing it down over many years as Los Osos establishes its own reserve will help with some long-term funding, especially those that I would generally think would be good for groundwater basin analysis. But not on this list is the issue of water quality analysis. The State Water Board's proposed general permit sought to expand water quality analysis throughout the state of California. Your board sent a letter expressing an understanding for the need for improved water quality, but also expressing concern about the nature of the unfunded mandate. And then lastly, some of the strategy discussions are certainly going to have to get into the overall topic of how do we do cost sharings with various communities. Because while there is a significant influx in one-time reserves that your board is going to have available for making discretionary decisions, the unfunded needs are still significant, and the more that we can work with the various communities or other agencies in cost-sharing agreements, the better that money is going to be able to move forward and help with effective program development in the future. So that's a summary of some of the strategy discussions, again, that your board can anticipate in the upcoming year. In terms of the district's overall water, I'm just going to briefly touch on our wholesale water operations with Nacimiento, Lopez, Zone 3, Salinas Dam, and State Water. In total, those are just over $30 million a year in annual operating budget, and certainly the vast majority of the district's operations in excess of 95% of the district's expenditures and revenues. And all of those operate as enterprise funds where the preponderant level of confidence that if we get into emergency situations or if the concerns about global warming, you know, get as bad as some people might be concerned they are, the idea that these water operations all rest within the county and the ability through, you know, one governing entity to, in order to address emergency situations or climate changes gives me a much higher confidence level than if these operations were all sort of diversified into, you know, various different entities. With respect to then moving from the wholesale water operations into our flood control zones of benefits, there's a few. The most recent was flood control zone 18 up in Cambria, about in the 1990s. I don't recall the specific date. But there was a significant flooding in the community of Cambria, and Mr. Benedicts, through working with some of the hazard mitigation funds, was able to implement a project that was completed around a year ago, and it provided for an additional bypass project, and there's another bridge on Highway 1 for the excess flows to get under, but it was a very successful project to help mitigate flooding risks in Cambria. Substantially funded, again, through hazard mitigation funds, but also through contributions of both the county and the flood control district and assessments that were approved within the community of Cambria. So that's the most recent one, flood control zone 18. There's many numbers that are not on the board because the history of the flood control district goes back to the 1940s. And so with incorporations of some of the cities, like the city of Morro Bay, I think, was flood control zone 3 at one point in time. But some of them simply went away through incorporations, and some of them I don't know the history on. But those that we have right now, if I go from south to north, flood control zone 4 helps support the financing and the maintenance of the Santa Maria levee system. That operation is led by the Santa Barbara County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and we've been, had an agreement with them for many decades where there's a cost sharing that's based on assessed value, and there's assessments that are imposed, and your board, you know, approves those to be collected on property taxes every year, essentially for the farmland in flood control zone 4 that has protection from the Santa Maria levees. Moving northerly, of course, flood control zone 1 and 1A has been a topic of a lot of discussions this past year. Flood control zone 3 is actually the water supply component. And as I mentioned before, the reason why that zone was set up as a special zone was because when the dam was originally constructed in the 1960s, the voters of zone 3, which substantially is the five cities area, approved general obligation bonds by a vote in excess of the two-thirds voter requirement. So we needed to have a zone of benefit in order to define the voting area and the taxing area. But again, that's our water supply project. And then the largest that we see there, Zone 9, which encompasses the San Luis, the city of San Luis Obispo and much of the San Luis Obispo Creek watershed, is a zone that is unique. I'm going to run through its numbers. That was formed just prior to the passage of Proposition 13 in the mid-1970s. And the reason why Zone 9 was formed was because of flooding events that had occurred in and around the city of San Luis Obispo. Both in 1969 and 1973, there were significant flooding events. And, in fact, when I was a young child, I remember driving up with my parents from Southern California because we had a home that was on Ocean Air Drive in San Luis Obispo. And I still can see my dad's face to this day as we walked into the house, and there was a three-foot, a water line in that house that was 3 foot high. He had some sort of idea that we were going to go and clean up the house in a weekend and quickly changed plans. Well, when Proposition, so Zone 9 was created, and it was based on, you know, a mutual decision sort of by the city of San Luis Obispo and the Board of Supervisors, ultimately your board's decision, but supported by the city, with the idea that for a couple years, a special tax would be used in order to develop a drainage and flooding plan, and then after that drainage and flooding plan was prepared, then subsequent decisions would be made as to, well, what to do about improvements that are necessary. Well, right in about the second year or so of that effort, Proposition 13 was passed. And Proposition 13, of course, then took away the local agencies, your board and city council's abilities to set special tax rates and instead set what we have today as the 1% property tax pie. It also meant that individuals in Zone 9 no longer paid a special tax above and beyond 1%. You know, they paid the same tax that everybody else did. But since Proposition 13, Zone 9 still continues to get an allocation of the 1% property tax pie because Assembly Bill 8 passed by the legislature right after Prop 13. Although the property tax pie was reduced statewide to the 1% amount, for the most part, everybody who was previously getting tax revenues would still get the same proportion of what they were previously getting. So Prop 13 did essentially two things. One is it reduced property taxes, kept the allocations the same, but wastewater operations, it includes some of our County Service Area 1 operations down in Apomo. There's some for the CSA 10 operations in Cayucas and lighting districts. But those are the your county service areas and your lighting districts. And, you know, your non-board governed special districts of about $12 million looks like a big chunk, but that also includes some pretty large, you know, the Port San Luis Harbor District. I think it includes APCD. But there are individual special districts out there that, like a couple of the CSDs actually get tax allocations in excess of the 721. But today we're going to focus on about the $2.8 million out of that total countywide tax pie that comes from, that goes to the flood control district. And as a little bit of a sort of that's, you know, it's a 1% countywide property tax pie, and the flood control district gets just a little bit less than 1% of the 1%. So if you have a home and you're paying $1,000, if you have $100,000, per $100,000 of assessed value on your home, you pay $1,000 in general property taxes, and about $6 of that goes to the flood control district. Well, out of that sliver of pie then, how that money is distributed within the flood control district itself. Again, this distribution is based on the Assembly Bill 8, which was passed right after Proposition 13, and then the state legislature made some adjustments to the property tax allocations a couple times after that. but the substance of it was Assembly Bill 8. And what I've shown here is in the green is really the discretionary funding that's available for your board on any of the flood control district purposes, and in blue are the non-discretionary. Now, the reason why the blue are non-discretionary is based on contractual commitments. So the biggest chunk is the $1.1 million that's allocated to the Nacimiento Fund. And the way that that works is that when the contracts were executed with Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, Templeton, Atascadero Mutual, is that the county's position was that the project needed to be adequately sized in order to convey all the water associated with the project, even though those agencies were only contracting for about 60% up front. And the policy discussions at that time went a little bit to the contrast with the State Water Project, where State Water was really only constructed based on the request in the early 1990s. So the county said to the contracting agencies, hey, we want to make sure that this pipeline is adequately sized, but we don't really have any revenues to pay for that upsizing, so Paso and San Luis and everybody else is going to have to make the commitment to pay for it. And then when others take the water in the future, then those initial participants will get reimbursed, like through connection fees. But if some new agency wants more water, they're going to have to pay a buy-in fee, and then to the extent that Paso and San Luis and everybody has paid for upsizing, then those initial participants are going to get reimbursed. Well, with the county policy of, you know, we want this project upsized, the response from the participating agencies is, well, that tax allocation that's historically allocated by state legislature to the Nacimiento Fund, we want that to go and help offset debt service, you know, to the extent that you're getting it, because if the legislature took it all away or whatever, then, you know, there's not much we can do about that. But the idea is that, so now it's a contractual commitment. Rather than a legislative mandate or the state of Sacramento, you know, the Board of Supervisors has said to the Nacimiento project participants, yes, we will dedicate this tax revenues to this very important project. When the project is fully subscribed, then this tax revenue will come back to your board's discretion. Or when the debt service is paid off, this tax revenues will come back to as your board's discretion. But that's not going to happen in the foreseeable future. Similarly, on Zone 3, with the seismic remediation, the upgrade to the seismic remediation project, the Zone 3 agencies basically took the same position in the renegotiation of the Zone 3 contracts, and that is to the extent that there's a historical allocation of property tax revenues to Zone 3, they wanted to see that contractually committed to help offset debt service associated with the seismic remediation project. So these two portions of the pie are certainly not available on a discretionary basis. They're contractually committed to those two projects. Zone 1 and 1A, I also sort of show in blue, although maybe technically it's green, but I put it there simply because we know that there are significant liabilities and risks associated with Zone 1 and 1A. In contrast, then, Flood Control General, which will be a separate pie, which is the budget, again, that helps support our general water resource planning efforts and a lot of the efforts that are led by Courtney Howard, is about $1 million. And then Zone 9 is the current amount of this historic allocation that goes to Zone 9. And one of the unique features, of course, is that Zone 9, unlike Zone 1 and 1A, has no facilities that it's specifically responsible for. And again, it was set up to do some planning, and it was more ordered in the 1960s. The board had signed that state water contract. It was a pre-existing obligation, and as a result, the ability to have that exemption and to do a tax override to pay for the cost of the state water project continued to exist. Now, these costs are only for the excess allocation, right? Because to the degree that Morro Bay or Pismo Beach or the others had chose to participate in this state water project, then they are paying for 100% of the cost of their participation. But still, there's additional costs, and so these show up on everybody's tax bills every year. And what this pie chart sort of shows is the blue line shows the increase in costs that we've actually had, and that's the scale on the right side. So our cost of carrying, the countywide cost of carrying the excess allocation, is currently just over about $1 million. And these costs have ramped up quite significantly, almost you know, doubled in the last 5 years or so. And that is a result of a lot of the concerns that are going on in the Delta and the costs associated with looking at bypass facilities and addressing the Endangered Species Act at the source of supply. There's other costs associated with it, but certainly that's a big driver. And in the future, if the Department of Water Resources proposes bypass channels, we could actually, or bypass facilities, conveyance facilities, we could also see this cost increase even more. Now, the left side is what shows how it compares to property tax bills. So right now, if for about $100,000 of assessed value, each property tax bill is going to pay about $3. So, you know, if you've got a $500,000 house, you're paying about $15 a year for this state water excess allocation. The actual tax rate at $3 per $100,000 assessed valuation is on the relatively low side. In the early 1990s, it was as high as about $10 per $100,000 as assessed value. Anyways, you know, that's, again, the point being is that in addition to the 1% property tax allocation that comes to the flood control district, there's also the special tax override for the excess allocation of state water. And there is a little bit of an analogy to the Nacimiento, right, because to the extent that state water still has an excess allocation and it's being paid for on a countywide basis, that slice of the 1% property tax pie that's supporting Nacimiento's excess allocation is also countywide revenues.
Pavel, let me interrupt if I could. Supervisor Patterson has a question on
Certainly.
This item.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Oberman, just for clarity, you said that the allocation that property owners are now paying are just for the excess allocation, that the amount subscribed for falls out of the equation. And what I'm curious about, and you also mentioned that the assessment has gone down from about $10 to $3 per thousand per $100,000 assessed Right. value. When subscribers buy the drought insurance, if you will, to ensure that they get adequate delivery, does that fall out as well?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so whatever the allocations are, which is about, you know, 5,000 acre feet a year, I think in total, 5,000 or 6,000. Sure. They buy drought insurance for that, and then so we're only paying now what is actually left to purvey then.
Yeah, and in general numbers, the district, the county has a 25,000 acre foot per year allocation. About 5,000 is subscribed, and about 5,000 is also contracted under drought buffer agreements, which then leaves about 15,000 associated with the excess allocation. And that's what the special tax rate pays for.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The axis on the right is labeled tax revenue rather than cost. Do I assume correctly that the Department of Water Resources tells us what they need from us for a particular year for our unused allocation?
That's correct. It's called the Statement of Charges, and we get billed every year. There is some variances in we have reserves still for state water. We're allowed to carry some reserves. And so that is the tax revenue. The actual cost might vary up or down a little bit, and then that variance is either funded or added to reserves.
And so the actual tax rate per 100,000 is set by some allocation formula then?
That's right. We submit to the auditor controller every year what the needs are based on the DWR billing or statement of charges, and then the auditor determines the tax rate.
And do we have any I was going to say authority. We don't have a lot of authority in some instances, but basically it's take it or leave it on that excess allocation. If the state came in and said, we're going to double these charges, or are we pretty much?
Sir, it's based on the contractual obligations, but to the extent that the state is making their own discretionary decisions consistent with the contracts, then we've also identified a lot of other projects in that waterway management plan that they would like to fund. Staff has historically supported funding for that Mid-Higuera bypass channel as a way to get it shovel-ready and grant-eligible. But the status right now is that they don't have grants for it. So the reserves on the right column show reserves. The reserves in that fund are about $2 million. And the annual budget is on the left, and about $425,000 in annual budget. And, of course, Our correspondence with them dates back to 2006, and that's really when some of our concerns associated with the 1&1A levee system really starting to heighten and everything. So we want to continue to support San Luis Creek Watershed, but it begs the question as whether or not some of this money should be used for countywide creek maintenance, or whether or not someday we might be in a bind in terms of the unfunded liabilities associated with Zone 1 and 1A. No recommendations at this time, but certainly it's in the table, and I am a little bit lost here. Oh, with respect to the flood control district budget itself and that 1%, so about $525,000 goes to data management. The $335,000 is water resource planning, which is a lot of the work associated with the master water plan and integrated regional water management plan. And then the Water Resource Advisory Committee, public inquiries and supports, and there's about $30,000 in there for the mobile lab of the RCD. And then we have countywide overhead, admin, our accountants, and a relatively small slice that has historically been available for drainage and flood control planning, where that funding has typically come out of reserves. And then that is our 10-year history associated with the flood control general. This big bump in revenues was because we were able to sell some of the state water excess allocation to Santa Barbara County when the governor had declared a two-year emergency. We don't have the discretion to do that right now, per the Department of Water Resources. And then here's the big spike in reserves that we've seen, basically an increase of about $8 to $9 million. And the source of that was the historical Nacimiento reserve, the Nacimiento fund reserves. Because in the contracts, as I had previously mentioned, as soon as the project went operational, then future tax revenues were dedicated to the debt service. But we had also made it clear that at that point in time, any of the pre-existing reserves that had come out of the 1% pie and had been discretionary to your board needed to come back to the district and to its general fund for discretionary funding, because in essence, that's the only real, you know, shot of money for the flood control district. That overall general fund, you know, budget of about $1 million is pretty thin in comparison to countywide needs, and that's why there will be, I believe, a lot of discussion next year on what to do with that $8 to $9 million. Some of it we think should be needs to be set aside for the debt service reserve on Los Osos. Assuming that's about $3 million, then the idea is the Los Osos Enterprise Fund builds up their own reserve 10% a year for 10 years, and then we can draw down that $3 million 10% a year for 10 years, about $300,000. My general thought there is that would be a good program to help with enhancing our overall groundwater management program, at least for a decade plus. But again, getting into those types of discussions are things that we think are part and parcel with actually getting into the strategy discussions on the master water plan and the various work efforts in 2012. I have one that says questions.
I thought you would never ask.
It's going to take 10 minutes to ask questions.
Supervisor Meacham.
I'll try to be quick here if I can. But what is the status of our capacity study, Pablo, and when will we see that? I know that Courtney was working on it, and I think she's done. But
on the state water capacity study?
Yeah.
And I'll let Ms. Howard give us a quick update on that. I know that they have completed phase one. Some of the numbers came out interesting, and I asked them to do a little bit more analysis on that as well.
Good morning, Courtney Howard, County Public Works. We do have the final report posted online at slocountywater.org on our state water website. It's a draft final, I should say. There has been some feedback to do a couple of additional model runs to understand the relationship between taking water out at Lopez turnout versus what you can take out in Santa Barbara County. So we'll have a few more scenarios to append to the report that's currently posted. What I'd like to do is share the results of that report in the context of the Master Water Plan. People can see what the results are now, but in terms of what does that mean, how does that fit into our overall picture with our needs in our county? What are the next steps? I'd like to talk about the results in that context.
In groups is really good because clearly their understanding, the RCDs and the conservation groups, of what's in the creeks and, you know, what the issues are is better than ours. The confidence that the resource agencies have in terms of getting permits and making sure that, you know, Public Works isn't going to get in there and bulldoze everything down is, you know, it's real. We want to believe that we're leaders in environmental stewardship, but the permitting agencies still have greater confidence than others. But I think cost effectively, too, the RCDs and some of these conservation groups are going to be more cost effective. And if we develop the partnerships and they can get the volunteers, we're going to get, you know, better results by working with them than just developing our own programs.
Okay, well, I'll be interested to work with that because I know that the current mayor, and when I was mayor, we were willing to get a couple of D8s side by side and clear the Salinas that needed it, but that wasn't looked upon very favorably. My last question, Pablo, is regarding the Nazmiano excess water availability. I know that the cost for that pipeline was basically at the with San Luis Obispo, Paso, Atascadero, Templeton to build the pipeline. They're signed on to this. What would the additional cost be to them if they were to take the full allocation of that water?
It would be that $1.1 million.
And that's it?
Yeah.
And, okay. But the increased pumping costs, things like that?
Yeah, the pumping costs are based on actual delivery.
But
so
that'd be pretty minimal, actually.
In the grand scheme of things, yeah. A couple hundred dollars an acre foot versus they're paying $1,500 or plus for, you know, total project costs. Because the only subsidy, if you will, that goes into the project is that $1.1 million. The way the contracts work is that they obligated themselves to pay for 100% of project costs,
right.
And then to the extent that we have this tax allocation and recognizing that, you know, what if the state takes it away?
Because I've never understood why all the agencies didn't take their full allocation.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I should add that in addition to that, they'd have to do environmental impact reports and they would have to do...
Why? It's already done.
I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Gibson.
How things are versus how things ought to be or we wish they were. Taking off from that point, just understanding that the total of $2.8 million out of the property tax pie, as you've been calling it, is at a start completely discretionary to this board, subject then to the contractual agreements that we make. I mean, that gets freed up, but in the wider scheme of things, as we look many years down the line, we might be looking at being able to redistribute that as necessary.
That's correct. And some of the basic theory at that point in time when the contractual commitments were made was that those were extremely important projects to implement at that point in time. And then when the debt service or when those projects are fully subscribed, then the tax revenues would be freed back up for your board's discretion then to work on, you know, the next phase of issues that would be in front of the region.
So that's coming out of the operating budget. What you're proposing for the Los Osos Reserve Fund is sort of a mirrored, analogous situation on the reserve side in that there's an important, you know, I would argue, a project of significance, counting wider than Los Osos. We know the impacts that it has. And so we're there to support that and to eventually taper out of that.
Right. And in the many discussions of Los Osos in the past, you know, obviously we've brought that up. It is a contractual commitment with our SRF loan agreement to set up that debt service reserve. The State Water Board itself, when we get an SRF loan for a drinking water supply through the Department of Public Health, they allow us to set up that debt service reserve 10% a year for 10 years. The State Water Board, arguably because of the history of Los Osos and the defaults and everything, said no, they want a county reserve set up from day one. So the strategy then is to follow the Department of Public Health's policies of having the enterprise set up their own reserve,
right.
And then allowing us to draw it down. And I think the opportunity then is for well over a decade then we'll be able to do long-term program development. Anytime we're looking at an influx of reserves like $9 million, the idea is what's immediate needs, what is wise and cost-effective to spend now, what should be really spent over a long-term period of time for program development, and then what should continue to be held in reserves for contingencies and unknowns.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up with Supervisor Meacham's question regarding Santa Margarita Creek, we completed our sixth year of the vegetation management program in Yerba Buena Creek in Santa Margarita. It overtopped and flooded a portion of the community regularly. Prior to that time, it hasn't overtopped since we... How soon we'll be getting back with this discussion, and if there's an opportunity, Mr. Meacham and I are working with others in the North County, as you know, on the Paso Robles groundwater management plan, and there's some needs there that I hate to wait until July, basically, to get those things underway, and I'm just curious about what your timeline is.
Okay, so the two that are most immediate would be the master water plan, as Ms. Howard spoke to, as well as coming back on the Paso Robles groundwater management plan. And Courtney, you might be able to help me on, we need to be back on the groundwater management plan because that does require adoption in order to make us eligible for additional grant revenues, but I can't recall what that date is.
Yeah, Courtney Howard, County Public Works. There's a grant opportunity coming up, and currently the schedule is for applications to be due in spring of 2012. Not sure what date that is in spring, but basically I'm looking at the month of February to try and come to your board to consider adoption of the plan and introduce the master water plan in order to be able to get direction from your board and then develop the appropriate materials to apply on time for those grants. One grant has to do with local groundwater assistance, so that's probably the ideal grant to target for implementing components of the groundwater management plan that's been developed for the Paso Basin. To be eligible for that grant, you also have to adopt the plan, and so that's why I was targeting February in order to consider that adoption and then apply in the spring of 2012. The other thing that's coming up is an opportunity to get a grant to do the update to our IRWM plan, and that's going to be due in February.
IRWM, so, what is that?
The Integrated Regional Water Management Plan.
Earworm.
Earworm.
Oh, yeah.
However you want to say it. And there are also, that is also a grant program that could be an opportunity for getting funding for implementing some of these things that we've identified. And so that's why I wanted to target early February to introduce the outcome of the Master Water Plan and also the concepts for that grant application to update the IRWM plan.
So February being our highest rainfall month, it makes sense to be talking about water during that month. So we'll look forward to that. And Pablo, if I may quickly, and we may need Courtney for this, there's a couple of other water programs because you were looking for suggestions on priorities, and I wanted to offer some input on that. We have the Santa Margarita Drought Reliability effort underway, and I think that's coming back to us relatively soon. Also, you mentioned the Paso Robles Groundwater Management Plan. Associated with that is our basin model and the need to update the data in that model. It's 14 years old, and in order to make it more functional and reliable, we need to do that. We have the groundwater monitoring program. That's a program in place, and I assume that will just continue. I don't know if we need additional funding or prioritization for that, but I don't want to lose track of that because that's so important. And then you mentioned the creek maintenance program that hopefully we'll speak more about later, but also it's come up in various water balancing projects that we don't have reliable data on contributions of many of our creeks in the watersheds throughout the county, and there's been discussion about actually doing some creek monitoring as well, not in terms of quality, but in terms of water contribution to the groundwater and to our surface water resources. And I know we used to have monitoring stations throughout the county, and we've let those go over the years, and we might be appropriate to have a conversation about getting some of those key monitoring creek monitoring stations back in service. Also, and Ms. Howard, I know you and I have discussed this, as well as Mr. Ogren and I, we have, I believe, 5 ocean outfalls in San Luis Obispo County that are pumping what was previously fresh water out of the county and into the ocean. And I think we need to take a look at that as a water resource for this county and what we need to do to keep the water on the land instead of discharging it in the ocean. So I don't know if that's – I think that's included in the master water plan, but okay. But that's an important water resource that other communities aren't overlooking. And I think we need to start taking a serious look at what it would take to keep
you planning projects to understand how to implement some of these projects and develop these concepts more. And so we're currently soliciting different agencies and entities to submit their planning ideas to the district and the subcommittee of the Water Resources Advisory Committee. And I anticipate some of the ideas that will come forth are related to, you know, how do we implement recycled water projects throughout the county? How do we understand better our watersheds and the ecosystem needs of a watershed and how that relates with the surrounding uses? Soil and nutrient management planning is another area where I see these ideas coming forth. So right now we're collecting all of these planning project ideas in order to look at them and see how we can package them to be competitive for an IRWM planning grant, mm-hmm. To be able to move forward some of these ideas and get them closer to being implementable.
Would that latter effort of seeking these planning grant opportunities, would that include identifying potential recharge areas in the county, also in identifying them as such so we preserve those for the opportunity to recharge our groundwater basins?
That may be a good candidate for the IRWM planning grants, yes.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, and I'll just be quick here. I do appreciate my colleague bringing up the modeling update that we need to do in working with the Paso's groundwater management plan. That needs those folks, that steering committee is working really hard to get there for this. But as a follow-up, I would assume, and I know that they're here today, the Resource Conservation District can provide an awful lot of information relative to some of the things that we've been talking about right now about our watersheds. And so I guess when we get into discussion about budget this next year, if we're going to be asking them to do more, I hope we have some place in there for them to get more. So,
yeah, public?
Yes. We will go to the public if we're allowed to. All right.
Well, being forbearing, Mr.
No, I'm going to talk to Mr. Grant about giving Public Works its own day. And we'll broadcast it on ham radio for the hardcore enthusiasts.
Hey, water's important.
Councilmember John Ashbaugh, who's patiently been waiting for several hours. And I see Mr. Prischer just handed in some as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have been patiently waiting, but I have not been bored. It's been a very interesting meeting so far. I'll be brief. For most of my 3 years on the City Council, I have been our city's delegate to Zone 9, as well as to the Water Resources Advisory Committee. But my experience with both bodies actually goes back much earlier. In fact, I was David Blakely's appointee to the Water Resources Committee. And I also, through my work with the Land Conservancy in the early 1980s, I became familiar with Zone 9. And although I can't claim to have as much experience as our former mayor, Dave Romero, I have more experience than former City Council member Christine Mulholland, both of whom are citizen delegates to that body, believe it or not, which makes those meetings very interesting, too. Jill could attest to that, I think. I do want to express our city's concern about the statement in your presentation to the effect that the Zone 9 funds are technically discretionary for your board to allocate elsewhere to any need of the district. As you might expect, we would prefer that the Zone 9 revenues that you are currently allocating to Zone 9 continue to be allocated to Zone 9. And I appreciate Mr. Ogren's history about this this unique zone of benefit and his own personal association with it on Ocean Air Drive, I guess. When it was established in 1974, nobody within the district boundaries at that time had been told that the property tax, the additional property taxes they were paying for a few years, were technically discretionary to be used anywhere in the county. They were to be used within the Zone 9 boundaries. There was no need to tell them that until, of course, Prop 13 came along. And then they did get folded in, as has been mentioned, with the overall 1% and allocated proportionally. But note that year, 1974, that was only a year after Mr. Ogren had come home to find his home with that 3-foot flood line, devastating floods that occurred throughout San Luis Obispo region, San Luis Obispo Creek. Based on those floods and that experience, plans were, in fact, developed and adopted by the Zone 9 Committee. I've seen those plans. They called for major improvements to the waterways, many of which were far too ambitious and, in fact, environmentally destructive. And therefore, we have learned, really, since then, what our limits are within that watershed. And we are, I think, very proactive with the city in using our Measure Y funding for this purpose. But Measure Y expires in 2014 unless we can get it renewed. Any source of funding that we have available to us, we want to work to preserve. And I'm happy to do that in collaboration with you, with the Zone 9 Committee. And thank you for your attention.
Okay. Thank you, Council Member. Chuck Pritchard followed by Laura Edwards, or did you want Laura Edwards followed by Chuck Pritchard? It looks like Laura Edwards followed by Chuck Pritchard is the preferred.
Chuck Pritchard followed by Chuck Pritchard.
Ms. Edwards, good to see you.
Good afternoon. Good to see you, too. Thank you for having me. Laura Edwards, Director of the Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District. Today, we've heard about important resource issues from our very talented and dedicated county departmental specialists and directors. I think we're lucky to have them, and we're lucky to live in such a richly diverse natural setting in San Luis Obispo. An area that draws an estimated $5 million in tourism each year because of its rich natural resources, and a county that represents nearly $713 million in agricultural crop values because, again, of its natural resource offerings. We keep recreationalists coming back for beaches, scenic hiking, exploring, wildlife watching, and more, again, because of its rich, diverse natural resource offerings. Total value of all these industries combined is about $1.2 billion to our county. And when we add these together industry-wise, we can estimate they support well over 10,000 jobs here locally. They sustain our population, our quality of life, and yet all of these industries rely on one common factor for their success and long-spanning sustainability. And that commonality is a pristine, regenerative, and richly diverse ecological landscape. One that doesn't happen on its own. The RCD works hard to nurture the resources that will sustain our local human population for social, ecological, and economical perpetuation. We offer services and education to local landowners, serve large and small to help them better manage their lands for richer soil, water, and natural resources that all of us can enjoy for a very long time. Strengthening our organization ensures a healthy natural environment which enables robust local agricultural activities, enriched local tourism, and diverse recreational opportunities, and a sustainable living environment for all of us. So we've brought hundreds of thousands of dollars of grants to this county for land improvement projects, trail systems, river restoration, water quality projects, domestic livestock, manure management assistance programs, educational programs, and so much more. For 60 years, we've served as a go-to pinch hitter for local landowners in need, the cities, the county, and various other agencies. We have been a valuable tool for you. Today, we ask to become more than a pinch hitter. We want to be part of your regular lineup. Involved in the pre-planning of resource management, we would like to be involved in the solution delivery of project implementation, and of course, we'll always still be here for you for the resource mitigation projects too. Utilizing the RCD as a resource partner in a precursory way is helpful to the county because times are tough and your crews are at capacity. We can help. We can reduce your risks and cut you and cost you less. And we have land access capabilities that regulatory agencies aren't privy to, or should I say, not really always welcome on. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Mr. Pritchard, always good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Chuck Pritchard, and I've got my Resource Conservation District hat on today. I'm very interested in where we're going to go with this IRMP project involving the county. And as Laura has stated, I think there's a definite position and a role for the district to play in this effort, not only in as far as streams and working with volunteer groups and things like that, but right now we have over about $100,000 of water quality testing equipment sitting in a storage building. We've done a lot of this work in the past. We've done it on the Salinas River and major contributaries to the Salinas River. We have the equipment. We have the expertise to do water quality work. We have the partnership with the Kachuma Resource Conservation District and also Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District on irrigation efficiencies, on water quantity. So we have the combination capability of water quality and water quantity testing. So I think that we've got districts, both resource conservation districts, that are really underutilized as far as their capabilities are concerned. And I think one of the frustrating things is I see more and more new groups being formed, and for what reason, I'm not quite sure, when I don't think we're very efficient with some of the groups we already have. So we're talking about putting a member on that board, so I think that's something that we would look forward to. I think that the potential right now is where do we go from here? And I think that there's an opportunity to get the districts more involved personnel-wise. We're going to need some additional financial assistance. Like Frank said, we can do a lot of this volunteer work, but it still takes someone to organize it and get it done. But we can do a lot more than that. So if that is something that you fellas could support, we would very much appreciate that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Appreciate that. And finally, Mr. Barrow.
Water. Sometimes you have too much, sometimes you don't have enough. That's the way it is. There was a lot of issues that you covered, so I'll just go through quickly. The Nacimiento water pipeline and supply, Pablo said the cost was $200 an acre foot or something like that. But I think you really truly have to, and that's, by the way, undersubscribed, so I don't think your balance sheet is reflecting a successful financial address to this issue yet. If you look at the cost of the treatment of the water, that was never a discussion that I've ever heard of until Paso Robles mentioned that they have three options for cost on water treatment plants, and one was $45 million, one was $25 million, and one was $12 million. When you add those costs into the cost of Nacimiento water, then it's different than pumping pure water from an aquifer. So I think you need to do that. The interim regional water master plan, water management plan, which covers all of these issues, I guess is an overview that includes the flood zone issues, which seems to be the real topic of the presentation, was the flood zone and the cost of them. The reserve of the Los Osos wastewater project just sort of came out of the blue, $2 million more that we have to set aside in addition to the $200 million of the project cost. State water is oversubscribed and limited and getting more expensive. If you don't create a sustainable water management plan and you have to import water, you may be looking at reverse osmosis. $3,000 an acre foot is what they're looking at in Santa Cruz County. If you have dry years, you're going to have less water. The dams will be less full. I think the capacity that Mr. Meacham mentioned, I don't see that as being something that's, I see the numbers on the show that Pablo did, but I don't see the capacity of the water that matches up the demands that we have. And then I see Mr. Patterson suggesting, and Pablo as well, well, we can look forward to more programs. I think we should try to do what the last man said and have less programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. That'll do it for the public, and we'll bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of thoughts. First of all, I certainly endorse the idea of finding ways to work with the RCD and other other similar agencies, proliferated or not. RCD's done some great stuff with our grading ordinance. They obviously have a set of skills that would be really important. You know, at the more detailed level, certainly establishing some protocols for creek clearing is something I think it can be applicable in all over this county and of interest to a number of residents who are anywhere close to those features. But then, stepping back at a more at a wider perspective, as the district or Mr. Ogren's team looks at strategies for allocating the resources of the district, I think we need to maintain a regional focus. I think it's analogous to how we've directed the planning department. We've indicated that among priorities after paying customers and so forth, that activities looking forward in the planning department should be consistent with SB 375, AB 32 goals. That puts us squarely in a regional planning viewpoint, which I think is going to be useful there. I think the same thing applies as we talk about the activities of the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, the Integrated Regional Water Management Planning Effort, the Water Master Planning Effort, and trying to understand how those two things relate to one another is a topic for another day. But I think with that, putting our efforts into things that contribute to a regional view.
I know I'd love to talk about it, but I could go on and on and on and on.
Just let Courtney
get
do
in
it.
Trouble.
We've got about an hour, I think.
Courtney Howard, County Public Works. That's another one where it's going to be brought into context with the overall master water plan results. And if, you know, we're looking at our excess allocations of water, whether it's state water, Nascimento water, and the options for it, how did the different options compare to one another, and banking being one of those options.
Thank you, Courtney.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson, and then Supervisor DeShera.
Yes. Thank you. I agree totally that in most things we do, we need to take a regional overview and try to plan accordingly, because there's greater benefit to achieve, certainly, when we do that. I just wanted to make one comment, and Ms. Howard mentioned the opportunity to apply for some grant funding, both for the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan as well as for the Master Water Plan, and possibly getting some funding for the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Management Plan. And I think that's well and good, and I think we should do that. You mentioned potential funding for the Paso Robles Groundwater Management Plan effort to update our model data and so forth, that deadline was in the spring. We likely won't hear for several months, and it's in the fall. And so my comment is that it puts any action on that a year out if we solely wait for the results of that grant. And it's not a given that we're even going to get that money. And when we come back and have this conversation, it would be helpful to this board to know what it might cost to do some of these things that we can do now and I think should do now, so we don't wait another year to get any, and that we don't risk the opportunity on funding that we may or may not get. So it would be good to know the cost of doing, say, the model upgrade and get that in place, because I know the steering committee will be recommending actions that we can implement, and without a valid model, it's hard to track the results of those actions, and I think we need to give serious consideration to actually investing now in updating that model so we can use it to track the successes or not of any actions that we implement for that basin.
Second.
Okay. Any further comments? This is basically a receive and file from
the.
It went off my screen. I think you clicked off. I'm sorry, Mr.
We're saving energy. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I echo the comments of my colleagues on doing this on a regional basis. I think this reflects the usage of the funding and the resource management for flooding on a regional basis. Kind of reflects the way the Quimby program and the PFF fees used to be done with parks, where we used it for the best use at the time and then collected funds to use them again. I can understand Councilman Ashbaugh's concerns, and I think that we as a county, should there be something happen in the city, that we would be there to back you up and to help you out. But I just think that we need to look at this from a regional standpoint. I think the RCD is one of the most underutilized resources, and no pun on words there, that we're using in the county. Having met with some of our farmers in the Zone 11A group last week and their concerns about breaching the levee, I think this would bring a lot of good help to those people and to the flood control and the public works people in our county. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I think we are in general agreement and our long-term regional view, and we appreciate the report and the work by Ms. Howard and Ms. Berg, Sogren, and all of those. And with that, we will move on to closed session. I have one request to speak, starring Al Barrow.
Thank you. There's a couple issues. One was Duval Ranch, Sunny Acres issue. And I think the Duval, I don't know if he told me yesterday that the county was trying to take his property or something like that. And I'm going, what? This guy's had it in the family for 99 years and he's been trying to help homeless people? I just really have a concern that the Duval Ranch is a place where there's a willing site to help homeless people. And some of those homeless people that he's trying to help are people that nobody else wants to help. And I'm having a meeting with several architects. One is a professor at those issues. And I think you should really be very careful about actions that you take regarding partnering in the bankruptcy. I know you spent a good deal of county resources opposing the creditors on this bankruptcy. So there's some unresolved issues that Monterey Mechanical, and I really am not for Monterey Mechanical getting a lot of money and assets from the district. But until this cloud is removed, I don't see how you can go forward with utilizing the district's assets. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. That'll close it to the public. I'll go to Mr. Jensen for a time estimate in closed session, please.
About 30 minutes.
Okay. We will adjourn for recess and be back at 1:30.
You're live.
We're live. Okay. Welcome back to your favorite Board of Supervisors. Mr. Jensen, report out of closed session, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board met in closed session. No reportable action was taken.
Okay, no reportable action. All right, we are on to presentation. To entertain a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Gibson. A roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Yeah,
right in front of your boss.
Wow. Mr. Patterson and Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes, okay. Our first presentation is to recognize the retirement of one of our outstanding employees, Rick Anderson. And Supervisor Teixeira is going to read, Rick, your resolution, and I know there's going to be some people who are going to want to chime in afterwards, so I know that's the painful part of retiring. We don't let you out easy. Supervisor Teixeira?
Thank you, Chairman Hill. It gives me great honor to read this resolution committing Rick Anderson in recognition of 23 years of service to San Luis Obispo County. Whereas Rick Anderson has worked for the County of San Luis Obispo since 1988 within the Information Technology Department, encompassing 23 years of employment before his retirement on December 16, 2011, and whereas Rick Anderson's primary work within information technology was focused on keeping internal enterprise applications and departmental local area networks running smoothly for the efficient sharing of information, whereas Rick Anderson served as the lead systems administrator for multiple technologies, including the Tivoli Storage Management System, which backs up the county's computing data, job apps, and the anti-spam system, and whereas Rick Anderson will now be taking a well-deserved break from county service to spend time serving our community in new ways, including volunteering for the Red Cross, providing professional photography services, creating, managing, and delivering multimedia presentations, and assisting his wife, and whereas Rick Anderson, having brought unique skills as a computer engineer, graphic designer, photographer, trainer, mentor, and communicator, will sorely be missed by all who knew him and who have worked with him. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors of San Luis County that Rick Anderson be and hereby is commended for 23 years of dedication and service to the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Rick, will you
come up there?
Congratulations. Rick, we'll get a picture with you here real quick. And then we'll see some people.
Lined up.
All right. Okay, before you'll get the last word, but we will hear from some others. First, Jeanette Pell, then I know perhaps we have Julie Rodewald would also like to speak. So, Jeanette?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the board. I'm Jeanette Pell, the General Services Agency Director. It's really a pleasure to be here today to recognize Rick for his 23 years of service to the citizens of the county. I've had the opportunity to work with Rick for the last 9 years. I, too, started my county job in 1988, and I remember when I first got here, I was thinking, wow, Rick and I will probably be retiring at the same time. So I'm a little bit envious that I'm standing here and I'm not planning on retiring anytime soon. But then again, I just heard all the things he's going to be involved in, and maybe it's okay. So I know that he has a lot of things planned for his retirement, but I also heard there was a home remodel involved, and I'm not too sure about that.
Yep.
Anyway, I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Information Technology Department, the General Services Agency, and the entire county. I wish you the best in your retirement. Good luck and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. And Julie would like to also chime in.
Okay.
She'll even go. Rick, it's your mic.
Well, it's been a long time. When I got here in 1988, there were 600 PCs and no networks and no file servers, and now we've got a couple thousand PCs and lots of networks and file servers and stuff. So there's been a great change in technology that's taken place. Perhaps the best thing that happened, though, happened in the mid-90s. Patrick Leeser, who you gave his accommodation for 30 years for last week, around the mid-90s came and said he was deciding between two employees he was going to hire. And he said it was kind of like apple and orange and didn't really know who to hire. And thankfully, he hired who I consider the apple of my eye. He ended up hiring Nikki, my adorable wife, who she didn't get it, but I took a shine to her right away and started sitting next to her in meetings and collaborating with her. And when we put up the Lotus Notes project, when we first started on the Notes project around 97 or so, we had to take something called a DISC test, D-I-S-C, a personality profile test. And I'll never forget that I came into the room, sat down, and in her shy and demure way, she grabbed my report and said, what did you get? Looked at it and said, oh my God, we're exactly opposite. We would never get along. And I said, what are you talking about? We're perfect. You know, where I'm weak, you're strong. And vice versa. I said, we're the perfect match. And of course, I was right. So in 2003, we married. That's my wife, Nikki. And I want to thank you all for this great honor. It was very nice, and it was a wonderful 23 years. And Julie, you'll see me again.
Great. Thank you. Okay. That was nice. It was good to have you. We will move on to another presentation as that Supervisor Patterson will read. If Trisha Gomez, I see Roy Rawlings from the Friends of Prado. I don't know if you want to come forward too. This is a resolution on the Roy, you're welcome to join Trisha. Yeah? Okay, we're coordinating and all right. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hill. This is a resolution proclaiming December 21st, 2011 as National Homeless Persons Memorial Day in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas difficult economic and personal times and an insufficient amount of adequate and affordable housing renders approximately 3,774 men, women, and children in the county of San Luis Obispo unsheltered and inadequately housed. Whereas, in recognition of the longest night of the year, December 21st, has been designated National Homeless Persons Memorial Day by the National Coalition for the Homeless and the National Health Care for the Homeless Council, and is so recognized by cities, counties, and states nationwide. And whereas, in this season of generosity and sharing, citizens of San Luis Obispo County are encouraged to commit themselves to promoting compassion and concern for all persons, especially those who are poor and homeless. And whereas, in remembering those who have died on the streets, the cause of ending homelessness is kept urgent, as is the county's collective commitment to preventing such deaths in the future. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim December 21st, 2011 as National Homeless Persons Memorial Day in San Luis Obispo County in recognition of the people who have died homeless in and around the County of San Luis Obispo, and we hereby ask all citizens to take a moment of silence in remembrance and encourage our citizens to support all local efforts to eliminate homelessness in our community. So with that, we'll take a moment of silence. Thank you, and I'll turn it back to Chairman Hill. We have some folks here to receive this award.
Okay.
Or this proclamation.
I see Trisha and Roy have been joined by Paul Wolf, so please.
We have Friends of Prado and the Homeless Services Oversight Council represented.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Patricia Gomez, and I am with the Homeless Services Oversight Council. And I want to thank you for adopting this resolution. You've joined all of the other cities in the community, in the county, who have adopted similar resolutions. As it states, those people who have died and have no homes. And perhaps that's something we can think about in the coming year, perhaps a little box to check so that we can know how we're doing or not doing. What I can tell you, though, is that your Department of Social Services, who handles the indigent burial, the indigent death program and makes the accommodations for those who die indigent, handled the arrangements for five people in the past year who died homeless. And these are people who died without homes and for whom they could not find a family member who could make the arrangements for the deceased. There may have been more, and they were just able to locate their family. So at least as to those five people, what we know is that this moment of silence that you gave today and the candlelight vigil that we give on December 21st at the Mission, and I have some flyers for you and for the public. May be the only time that we commemorate and honor the lives that they lived because they were somebody's father or mother or daughter or sister. So I do again thank you for the efforts that you have made, and I think that the other, my colleagues will speak to that with regard to the warming stations, and also urge you and members of the public to come to the vigil and continue honoring those who have who live in our community without homes. And that, again, will be on the 21st at Mission Plaza at 5:30 for a brief and very solemn ceremony. Thank you again.
Thank you, Trish. Roy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roy Rawlings. I'm on the Prado Day Board. Paul Wolf is here, too. He's a co-chairman of the Friends of Prado Day. Just want to thank you for a couple things. One is the $5,000 that you have provided for the warming station. That's going to be very helpful, and again, it'll offer some opportunities to bring some people off the street that would not be able to be that during tough times. So we really thank you for that, and also simply the recognition of the need to deal with the homeless situation, not only here but throughout the United States, and appreciate that very much, and appreciate that you recognize it. Thank you.
Thank you, Roy. Paul, did you want to say a few words?
I'd just like to echo Roy's comment of thanking the board. At this community, the board has always been very supportive of this issue, as the community, and our deepest gratitude goes out to them. This time of the year, there tends to be a lot of focus on homelessness, and we tend to often forget the other 364 days of the year, which are just as important. And where people are dying just as frequently. Dying homeless is, I think, one of the toughest situations you can be in. Hospice has now established a satellite program at the men's colony, whereas the prisoners provide their own support for prisoners who are dying. There's a hospice with it going run by the prisoners and within the CMC. We don't have anything set up like that at all for the homeless. So when the homeless die, really nobody really is aware of that. And the count, the official count of 4,000 for the county on homelessness is at best a guesstimate. We think it may be 10 to 20% of the actual homeless population out there. Nobody really knows. It's the most difficult population in the world to count. So we appreciate all your support, and we thank you, and we hope that more people will come out to the vigil on the 21st, which also coincides with the second night of the Hanukkah lighting, which is taking place at the same place at the Mission Plaza. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, I just want to thank Ms. Gomez, who's the Executive Director of the Homeless Services Oversight Council, Mr. Rawlings, Mr. Wolf, for your work with the Prado Day Center, and again invite people out on the first day of winter, December 21st, 5:30, Mission Plaza for a vigil to recognize the homeless who have passed away in our county. So thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Okay, we will move into our afternoon board business. Madam Clerk, if you could introduce the next item, please.
Item 35, a hearing to invite public input regarding unmet needs for the proposed 2011 Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Home Investment Partnership Act, HOME, and Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG programs.
Okay, thank you. And I see Mr. Navarro.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hill and members of the board. I'm Tony Navarro with your Department of Planning and Building. And today we're here to make give a presentation on the 2012 needs for the CDBG home and ESG grants. And I do want to make one correction, actually, for the clerk. The staff report identifies the administration, to name a few. And these funds primarily benefit low and moderate income households or persons. So if you have a household with four persons, then the combined income of $60,300 or less, then you would be an eligible household to benefit from these grant programs. On September 3rd, the county published the request or the notice of funding availability for the three programs. The applications were due on October 24th, and we received quite a few applications, as always. So I'll move on with the next presentation here, or slide. As I mentioned, we have several eligible activities, public services, public facilities, economic development, and so forth. And how does the CDBG program work? Well, first of all, these funds are an entitlement program, which you may have heard that they are being cut left and right at Capitol Hill. Last year, the county received about $1.8 million in CDBG funds. And the latest news we've received, and we won't know the exact funding amount until probably in a few months, but we're looking at about a 12% cutback. So we're thinking about $1.6 million for the CDBG program. It is an allocation based on a formula that HUD uses nationwide, and the county is the lead agency, even though there are participating cities that share that allocation of $1.8 million, and they take their separate approval process through their respective city councils. So here we have the county as the lead agency or the responsible entity to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And so we currently have the cities of Oro Grande, Atascadero, Morro Bay, which is a new city joining the urban county, and Grover Beach is leaving at the end of the fiscal year, Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo. So we have a bunch of stuff that we can do with CDBG. But we have to look at each project, and there are three national objectives that we must meet, either one of three. The biggest one is the benefit of low and moderate income persons, families, households. Also the prevention or elimination of slums and blighted conditions in the communities, or to meet an urgent need. And how HUD defines that, it's really it's more of a, if there's a disaster, you can use CDBG funds, assuming there are no other resources available to the local jurisdiction to eliminate a health and safety hazard. So that's a need. Hopefully we won't use that anytime in the near future. A couple side notes to the allowed uses under CDBG is that you do have a cap on the allocation for public services, and that's 15% of our allocation could go towards public services or human services, that's it's identified up here. And also on administration, there's a 20% cap on that. Under the home program, which is strictly for affordable housing, our allocation last year is $1.2 million. And the, again, going back to what's going on at Capitol Hill, the home program, it appears that there's about a 38% cutback, so that 1.2 is going to look like about 900,000 or just a little bit less than 900,000 for the urban county to address any affordable housing issues. The board, as the Board of Supervisors, is in control of those funds. And so we can take recommendations from the cities, but ultimately the board decides on the allocation of those funds. And the funds could be allocated in any of the cities, any affordable housing projects in those cities that I mentioned earlier. Eligible activities, for example, owner-occupied rehabilitation, homebuyer assistance, rental housing, tenant-based rental assistance. So you can acquire properties with home funds, or vacant sites for ultimately for the development of affordable housing. Eligible other activities, I mentioned property acquisition, site improvements and demolition that, again, will ultimately result in affordable housing. Rehab, we talked about that. Relocation expenses, if necessary, but definitely something we try to avoid. Assistance to home buyers and existing homeowners. So we can use we can assist a lot of households with these funds. So that's a very good program. Now, one that is going through a lot of change right now is what's the projects that are identified in the PowerPoint or in this presentation. Habitat for Humanity has a couple projects, one in Paso Robles and one in San Luis Obispo. It's also a request or a need for funding that would help low-income homeowners with the installation of solar panels, which will decrease their utility. First-time home buyer assistance. Rental housing is in high demand, especially for the extremely low and very low-income, and especially in trying to help meet federal requirements. And really, it's a affordable housing for the homeless. Property acquisition by transitional food and shelter. I think that was cut off there. Homelessness. There's a big need for homeless services, especially at the three or two shelters, homeless shelters, which are Maxine Lewis and the El Camino Homeless Organization, but also for the Prado Day Center, which provides services to the homeless. Case management, funding for case management of those homeless is also in great demand, but also implementing the homeless management information system, which is a tracking system for the homeless and providing services to the homeless as well. As far as public facilities are concerned, there's a request for the San Luis Obispo Veterans Building by General Services to address ADA access or the American Disabilities with Act requirements, compliance requirements. The need for a new homeless campus in San Luis Obispo. The community of San Miguel also has an array of needs relating to water. Their existing wells need some assistance. A new well is needed for a new source of water, but also their sewer treatment plant needs some work as well. And hopefully we have folks here who can touch on some of these specific items. We'll continue with public facilities. There's the property acquisition by North County Connection, which the board funded a few months ago in the amount of $35,000. There's still a need there for additional funds. Currently, the county is working with Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park in Los Osos. They need additional funding for their water and sewer lines in that park. Sidewalk and drainage improvements in Templeton were identified this year. also, the pavement of streets at the Hillview area west of Napomo was identified. And also the decommission of the septic systems in the community of Los Osos. Under public services, the senior health screening program, the teen academic parenting program, the 40 Wonderful program, all administered by the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, the Boys and Girls Club, and assistance with medication costs for extremely low-income households and persons. Then there's also economic development needs, technical assistance to micro-enterprises, and loan guaranteed for those micro-enterprises, primarily for business expansion, creation of new jobs is what we're looking for to target CDBG funds for. And with that, I'll conclude my presentation, and I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. This is a hearing to receive some input, so unless there's any questions at this point from my colleagues, I'll...
We just might mention it, and unless I missed it when Tony said where the next steps are, because we do then have a hearing to adopt what plan you propose to bring forward.
Yes. Well, first of all, the county will be releasing the draft funding recommendations, and that includes all of the recommendations from the city councils, and we'll start a series of workshops to receive comments on those draft funding recommendations. And then 30 days after the release of those draft funding recommendations, then the cities can begin to take action on their final recommendations that they'll submit to the county. Hopefully in March we can bring that to the board. I'm going for March, but worst case scenario, April, I think. But we'll try to help out some affordable housing folks and try to meet some deadlines to the state for tax credits in March.
Okay. With that, we will open up to the public, and we'll begin with Scott Smith, followed by Linda Van Fleet, please. Afternoon, Scott.
Hi, good afternoon, board members. Happy to be here today. I wanted to just mention I'm here to support the issue of housing, affordable housing, mention that in spite of the large drop in supply, rental housing is very scarce. And although there's a lot of vacant housing out there right now, most of that is bank-owned foreclosed housing that's not available for rent. So what's happened is that a lot of the families that have been foreclosed on have now gone from being homeowners to renters, so you've got more people actually renting. Your board's been tremendously supportive of affordable housing efforts. We appreciate that. Particularly, you've got a great housing element with really good housing policies, and you've been involved in the Homeless Service Oversight Council, which is awesome. We thank you for that, and very involved in the Workforce Housing Coalition. That is great. I hate to be really to doom and gloom, but the funding situation for affordable housing is very, very bad, like the funding situations with many, many programs these days. As Mr. Navarro pointed out, homes getting hit with a 38% cut, that's a big deal. You don't have very much money to work with to begin with, considering the needs, and CDBG is cut. We would personally advocate, since housing is so frequently identified as one of the top need in this county, not only from the people that need the housing, but by businesses also for their workforce, as we'd like you to start considering maybe how you can use some CDBG for housing, because traditionally it hasn't been used very much for housing, although it's eligible. So just real quickly, because I know I've got about 5 seconds, is that I want to let you know that redevelopment agency funding, that is a traditional source, 20% of that for housing. Pastor Obel's has an active agency, Atascadero, Pismo Beach had one. That's in the Supreme. The legislature, as you probably know, voted to eliminate redevelopment agencies. That source of funding is gone. It's in the California Supreme Court right now. It's going to get decided in January. But what we've heard is it does not look good, including the alternative proposal where they can recreate themselves. So that's a tool that's probably going to be gone. And then the home cut. So our recommendation is that you look at your funding really wisely and don't use it for Band-Aid approaches. Look at investing it in permanent housing resources, both for formerly homeless clients as well as workforce housing, that you drive your staff to be as creative as they can in looking at their approaches to using the funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Can I ask, who are you representing?
I'm sorry. Scott Smith with People Self-Help Housing.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Linda, followed by Renee Salas, please.
Chairman Hill, members of the board, my name is Linda Van Fleet. I am with your General Services Agency. And we have submitted for 2012 CDBG funding toward an ADA-compliant bathroom for the lower level of the county-owned San Luis Obispo Veterans Building. The current bathroom that services the Veterans Services Office and the Central Coast Veterans Military Museum on the lower level. It's just a little cubbyhole. It's accessed through our electrical room, and it is really insufficient. It's really very disheartening to have to direct a disabled visitor, perhaps in a wheelchair, to go outside of the building and about 400 feet around uphill to the upper entrance to get to our ADA-compliant bathroom. Our Veterans Services Officer has also sent a statement endorsing the proposal. On behalf of all veterans we serve here at the Veterans Services Office, especially those who are elderly and those living with disabilities, including myself, I want you to know that I think it is of great value to all stakeholders that an ADA-compliant bathroom be installed downstairs at the Vets Hall. And we thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Salas, followed by Michelle Mason, please.
Good afternoon, board members and chairperson. My name is Renee Salas, and I'm the San Miguel Community Services General Manager. And I'm here on behalf of our board to, first of all, thank you for this opportunity and for continuing with the CDBG project funding for 2012. As Mr. Navarro mentioned, we do have quite a bit of infrastructure needs for our district. And the one that we've applied for this funding cycle is for rehabilitation of our San Lawrence Terrence well, which we know as SLT well. This is one of our newest wells. It's one of three wells that we have, and it was installed back in 2006. Unfortunately, not too soon afterwards, the arsenic levels were creeping up, and we had to shut it down. The rehabilitation monies will be used to isolate those areas and try to bring the well back into operation. We do have a need for our community. We are a low to moderate income, and we've seen considerable drop in our revenue stream, so we are applying for funding for that project, and we really appreciate the opportunity, as well as our board appreciates that opportunity. And again, thank you very much, and happy holidays to all.
Thank you, Mr. Salas. Michelle Mason, am I saying that correctly? Okay. Followed by Pearl Munak, please.
Program. This is through the Area Agency on Aging. We just acquired it January 1st, and we have staff who go out and provide necessary services to help people continue to live in their own home, such as meal preparation, bathing assistance, house cleaning, Actually, when I saw on this paper about the 2011, I was going to ask a question. I still will ask a question. It can't hurt to ask, right? We did not apply for funds for 2010, 2011 for the homemaker because we didn't know if we were going to get that contract until July 1st. However, they are requiring that we have a match fund of $5,000 for 2010. 2011, 2012. And I don't know if you guys have funds that are still available for 2011, 2012, but, you know, like I said, I figured it couldn't hurt to ask, or if you know how I go about finding out who might have that available.
We can get you some answers. Do you have immediate answers here, Tony, for Ms. Mason?
If there, Tony Navarro County Planning, if there's a match that's needed now, we don't have any funding that is not contractually obligated for the 2011 program year, and it's very difficult to have a balance of funding that would be categorized as a public service. It's hard for it to carry over into the new program year and make it available unless there's a reduction in funding for what's already been approved. So we don't have anything right now, unfortunately.
Okay. But could you give Ms. Mason your card so that she might be able to follow up with you?
And can you tell me who you're representing?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm with Life Steps Foundation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Mason. And Tony will get you his card if he could. And we'll go to Pearl Munak, followed by Patricia Gomez, please.
Thank you. Pearl Munak, Transitional Food and Shelter Incorporated. There is an unmet need in this county for a facility for medically fragile homeless people. That's the people who are too ill or too injured or otherwise disabled to be in an overnight homeless shelter, people who are requiring 24-hour per day shelter. And we have been trying to meet this need by renting apartments. This is becoming more and more difficult as available funds are cut back and cut back and cut back. We've always known that it would be cheaper if we could buy, but we are not able to buy without capital grants. We've explored with various sites the actual figures, and we know that if we didn't have to pay rent and if we just had to pay utilities and insurance and maintenance, that it would be cheaper than paying rent also would be more adequate, because we're renting small studio apartments, and when you get a family in one, it becomes difficult as far as the capacity is concerned. So there is a need for that in the county, and it's a big unmet need, and that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Pearl. Patricia, followed by Jason Reed, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon again, members of the board. My name is Patricia Gomez, and I am your director for the Homeless Services Oversight Council. And today I wanted to make 2 points with regard to how you address affordable housing and also how you address homelessness. And in preparing for this, I actually went back and looked at the CON plan and to really look at what your plans are for the extremely low income, because when we talk about homeless or those who are at risk of homelessness, we really are talking about people who are in the extremely low-income category. And when I looked at your priorities on page 244 of your CON plan, I feared that this group had gotten lost in your thoughts, albeit not purposely. Your affordable housing strategies focus on creating opportunities for low and moderate income housing to increase rental, to increase home ownership opportunities, and to maintain better and safe neighborhoods for the low and moderate income, and perhaps designate to be set aside for homeless individuals and families. How can you work with our providers so that we can make these housing opportunities successful? And there's precedent for that. The Housing Authority in Paso Robles, and for receipt of home funds last year, agreed to set aside some of their units for homeless families. The HSOC, in its recent retreat, identified prevention and rehousing activities, such as your TBRA, as a priority. So it's entirely consistent with your plans and your prevention strategy. And indeed, as reflected in the emergency solution grants revisions, housing and prevention of homelessness is a national priority. In the past, your home TBRA funds were designated for special populations only, and that's very important. However, the data from our Homeless Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program that's set to expire next year has shown us that this type of assistance, prevention and rehousing assistance, is important for everybody. So when you make your decisions with regard to how you're going to use those prevention dollars and what programs you're going to support, I really urge you to include programs and proposals that will reach the broadest spectrum of individuals who are at risk or who are newly homeless. Thank you.
Thank you, Tricia. Jason, followed by Diane Reese, please.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is, let me adjust this here real quick. Jason Reed, Deputy Director at the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County. And first off, I want to commend this board for the what I believe is a significant amount of attentiveness and vigilance regarding the needs of the local homeless population. And I think today, with so many people coming forward and speaking about those needs, it further validates, I think, the fact that you have been very receptive to that. And we do appreciate that. The Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County, as many of you know, provides a wide range of services to victims of domestic violence victims of domestic violence. And perhaps the most important service that we provide that ensures the safety and well-being of our clients is housing, more specifically emergency shelter and transitional housing. And it's those two items I'd like to speak to here this afternoon. Our agency has been very grateful to have received funding through the years for the emergency shelter, and also now, as Tony said, the emergency services grant funding. Over the last year, that funding allowed our agency to serve 93 individuals in our emergency shelter. We provided 2,580 bed nights and 7,740 meals. As I said, this funding is really critical to ensuring the safety and well-being of our clients. Over 96% of the shelter residents that received services this last year reported that the services that they received increased their sense of safety and economic self-sufficiency. Again, we've been really grateful to receive this funding, and we also acknowledge that this funding provides a safety net, as it would with all the other recipients in this county who receive the ESG funding. So not to come up here and just represent our own self-interest, but we'd like to also encourage this board to do everything in its power to continue to ensure that ESG funding remains and that it continues to be distributed in a way that benefits the needs of our community. The second item, and I see I don't have much time, is our agency is in fact going to be applying for or did submit an application for home funding. And more specifically, we have a transitional housing property in the city of Grover Beach to which we feel meets the funding criteria for home. And I know Tony's already gotten our materials, but I just wanted to plant a seed there that our transitional housing program in the city of Grover Beach is unique in that there are no domestic violence housing services in the South County. And a number of recent surveys and studies and feedback have indicated the tremendous need for housing in South County, whether it's for domestic violence victims or the general homeless population. And so we really feel strongly that our home request for funding will better increase the habitability and the energy efficiency of a property that we recently acquired in March of this year. So thank you for your attention and support.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it. Diane Reese, followed by Ken Trujillo, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Diane Reese. I'm representing Mission Community Services. We are an organization that provides entrepreneurial and self-employment training throughout the county through a series of individual counseling, workshops, and classes, and our Friday afternoon brown bag dialogues. I'm here to support our request for funds. We do service the needs of the low and moderate income people in the county. We have seen our population shift in the last year from entrepreneurial services to the self-employment training. While there are other...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Honorable Supervisors. I'm Ken Trujillo from the Paso Robles Housing Authority. And we attended the community workshops in the North County, including the North Coast in Morro Bay, and let staff know, as is in your staff report, of the needs that we see from our perspective. And our kind of priority, I think, lines up with what you've heard from others as well. First on our priority list is to preserve the affordable housing that we have, and in our case, we're working on a project that you're all aware of in North Paso Robles, the Oak Park property, 148 units built in 1941, came online about the same time as Pearl Harbor, which we just celebrated the 70th anniversary. So obviously those units are in dire need of being replaced. We have about 500 people that live there now. It's a vital community. The workforce that's there supports the tourism industry, the agricultural industry, the manufacturing. It's in a critical location. And half of the population is in extremely low income. So as those folks have lost some hours and some jobs, the other priority has been to provide some assistance to keep them housed, because our rents are so low there that theoretically those folks won't have anywhere else to go if they're not able to keep paying rent at our place. So we've put in place some rental assistance programs, and we've been able to maintain folks and prevent homelessness that way in several cases. So we also put in an application for some home funds based on our experience and some of the other housers' experience in connection with our collaborators, the North County Homeless Services Providers Group, that has given input to this to present an application in collaboration to bring a program forward to serve that population, specifically in the North County, and to really help implement that portion of the 10-year plan that speaks to doing something like this. So again, preservation, new affordable housing, and keeping people in homes to prevent homelessness are our priorities. We're going to rely on some of these home funds. We're in a redevelopment agency area, and as you've heard from others, that's under attack, and we can't count for that funding. But the home funding, even though we have a huge project, is vital for us to be able to be to close the smaller gap, to be competitive for the equity from the private sources that we go out to, and bring in as much as $80 million for this 300-unit project that we're working on. That's about 800 jobs for our community, so it's very important for all those reasons, and we're hoping you'll consider that later on. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Ken. Hilda, good to see you.
Nice to see you all. Hi, I'm Hilda Zacarias, and it's a pleasure to be here to share with you what I've been up to. And what I've been up to is working with the Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access to help strengthen their services in San Luis Obispo County. Some of you may have heard about the Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access because I would often refer to it about as a community effort that works. It's cost-effective, and it results in healthier communities. So what does the Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access do? What we do is we connect individuals who cannot pay for their medication, their prescription medication for chronic illnesses, to the over 800 programs available directly from the pharmaceutical companies. Now, these programs have been in existence for a long time. As a matter of fact, when I worked for the congressman, I had a constituent come and ask me to help them get their medication. And I said, we can help you get your medication. And they said, yes, somebody said that the Congress's office can help you get this. So I called the D.C. office, and they said, well, don't you have that black book? And I said, what black book? Well, it turns out there was a black book about this thick that was a directory of all these programs. Well, that was 15 years ago. Some very, very smart nonprofit advocates were able to develop the software program for us to be able to use it to connect people directly. So what has happened? Well, from going from a seven hours a week volunteer position, we're now operating a full-time operation in Santa Maria, which costs us about $60,000 a year, that serves 1,000 client visits and results in over $1 million of medication into the hands of individuals who cannot afford them. This board is so committed to this that we made a decision to come to San Luis Obispo County, and we have been working most of this year to make that happen. We're happy to report that we've raised about $25,000 to launch our San Luis Obispo County efforts. We have been hosted at Arroyo Grande Community Hospital for the last 8 weeks or so. We're there one day a week, currently developing relationships with all our partners there. And we've been operating at the Sloan Knorr Clinic with Dr. Noristani for the last 4 weeks, where we're there on Friday afternoons to help the clients directly access these medications. What has the result been? With a very small investment, about $800 of direct costs for us, we have been able to serve 21 clients, and they have received over $11,000 in our efforts, and we invite you to share with us the good news that this help is available for all people, and we want to not only make sure people are healthier, but we want to help them not have to choose between basic needs of food and shelter and their medications to keep them healthy. So Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you, Hilda. Okay, that is all I have from the public, unless I see anyone else that we haven't called on that's coming forward. I'll bring it back to the board then, close it to the public. Look to my colleagues to see who wants to go first. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Navarro, I did notice in the staff report and in your presentation the need in Los Osos in terms of the helping low-income individuals hook up to the sewer project. One question, and mostly for the public, if you could speak to the timing of that, how you view those, you know, issues. We've been on the list for a long time, and just curious as to how you're looking at the analysis of that need.
Tony Navarro, County Planning. Well, one thing that the department has to look at is, as you mentioned, the timing is everything on these funds, and because there's a requirement to spend the money fairly quickly. And so the timing of the project in Los Osos is very critical to the allocation of the funds in order to get the program, which Public Works is proposing as a revolving loan program, to make those loans, spend down the funds in how HUD calls it, is a timely manner, so that the funds are spent and we don't have any of the funding taken away. So when the project is at a point where we can make a recommendation to the board for allocation for an award, basically. Basically we have to work closely with the community and Public Works on the timing and when they prepare or set up the program for the low and moderate income households in Los Sosos. So it's a very critical project. We've been waiting for, Dana and I have been waiting for well over a decade. Well, the history speaks for itself. To make a favorable recommendation, this is the only project where I think we can say in the planning department that we've been waiting for it to come home. And we want to help the families out there. And this is something that we identify to all the applicants and everybody who attends the workshops is this project is we're just waiting. It's going to be ready soon, hopefully. But, we never make promises. We just have to wait for that time. It's very critical.
Right. I didn't mean to put you on the spot on that, but I did want folks to understand we've seen this coming a long time, and where exactly it fits into the process depends on things outside of this particular process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, we have not made a secret of it. We usually, we don't make promises next year. But this is a very important project. We need to help out the residents.
Thank you. I just make two small refinements in terms of defining the need. It's listed under the heading of decommissioned septic systems in Los Sosos. The issue is a little bit broader than that, which is to see what we can do to help folks with the costs on their property in order to get connected to the public part of the project, which is in the street. So it's more than simply decommissioning a septic tank. There may be other costs involved in that. And the other comment that I would just make, I saw comments here regarding the need for water conservation efforts, and that's certainly the case in Los Sosos. It's certainly the case that there are people who are going to need some help. But as I think you know, the project also does include within it funds for executing water conservation. So, at the point where hard decisions need to be made, those on-lot costs of connection are probably more pressing than the water conservation efforts, which are also important. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Hill. We always have compelling requests, all of them very important. I'm wondering, Mr. Navarro, can you, again, for the listening and viewing audience, talk about the process? And you mentioned making recommendations, having another public hearing. Mm-hmm. Each of the five participating incorporated cities, they will be having their hearings, and we'll be back here in the spring for the final recommendations. But could you just briefly go through that process again so people know there are other opportunities to participate in the program?
Yes. What's really important is after the draft funding recommendations are released, is call me up. My phone number is 781-5787. And at the end of the presentation, I can also give my email address. But the point is we've got about 30 days for the cities and the county to reconsider the draft funding recommendations. So nothing's written in stone. So the month of January is pretty much dedicated to the reviewing and reconsidering of those recommendations. After those 30 days, after the publication, which I expect will be around January 14th or so, 15th, the city councils in Oro Grande, Atascadero, Morro Bay, Paso Robles, and San Luis Obispo, they'll have their public hearing on their draft recommendations for final recommendations submittal to the county for inclusion in the action plan, the 2012 action plan that will be presented to the board sometime in March, maybe April. We'll try March again. And that's another opportunity for the public to have and come before your board and speak on the needs and the recommendations. And another notice will be released prior to that board hearing date.
Very good. Thank you for that. And also, and we've heard repeatedly this afternoon, and we know firsthand that a number of the funding sources have been significantly reduced, so we can expect less money being available. When you evaluate the programs and rank them for your recommendations, do you consider if there are other funding opportunities for those particular projects? Is that something you take into account?
Absolutely. You know, we look at any funding source that could help us a match that will help that project, on a competitive basis. We definitely want to make sure that the project is feasible, that they have all their funding in line, especially right now where the funds are drying up. We want to make sure that the project doesn't bounce back, mm-hmm. or something happens that, obviously we don't want to throw good funds after a bad project, but anything else that we know of that can help out, we definitely would refer the applicant or help them out either through the state or the federal process to obtain other funding sources. Yes, we would help them out.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DeShera.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Tony, in the first part of your presentation, you talked about the affordable rental housing. Are we talking new units, rehab units, rental assistance for people to get into existing units? Is it all of that part of that? Where are we?
It could be all of that, yes. Acquisition of existing units, acquisition of vacant parcels for the eventual development of affordable housing, rehabilitation of existing affordable housing or new affordable housing, all of that is an eligible activity. Yeah.
So in the rehab, we're talking a program like Mr. Trigueros in Paso Robles, are we talking private sector stuff? Where are we on that?
It could also be private sector, but then, we have certain requirements, affordability requirements over a certain term, 30 years to 55 years. It's all of those that you
okay.
mentioned. Yes.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this just popped into my head, but oftentimes I know in a couple of communities that I represent, there are buildings that need to come down. They're old. They've been sitting there forever. Mm-hmm. The process is one in which there has to be an assessment done by, I think it's APCD, about lead paint, asbestos. Then there has to be the burn down of the building, then the removal. Is there any opportunity from a CDGB standpoint to get funding to just do the assessment or to do the debris cleanup?
There is a process. First of all, identifying that site, looking at what kind of requirements there would be. You mentioned quite a few of them, actually, especially for older buildings that may have lead-based paint, asbestos, which will have to be eradicated from the site. But also there would have to be a declaration of a blighted condition,
right?
In order to use CDBG funds to clean up the site, demolish the site, or any other process that you may have for the demolition of that.
Well, they would be blighted, and I would think that they'd be a health and safety issue as well. But mm-hmm. I don't know. That just popped in my head, and I didn't know if there was an opportunity at some point in the future to look at that.
And that is one of the eligible activities, is the removal of some blight.
Thank you very much.
Okay. With that, I just want to make a few comments myself, and this is basically just there are often so many, but in our own community, such great need, but certainly throughout the state, throughout the country, and to not to be able to provide the kind of funding and the kind of assistance that these agencies that work so well is difficult. It makes you feel like, we're on a sinking ship and we're not able to give life rafts or life preservers. Just we're giving people styrofoam cups and hoping they can hold on to that while the seas take them. So it's important for people to, not just during the holiday season, as was mentioned by some other people today, to think about those in our community who are struggling and less fortunate, but in a larger scale view. throughout our state and throughout our country as we have this conversation, or I guess we don't have this conversation because nobody seems to want to talk to each other anymore, about where we're headed and what we think we should do for, you know, as government and for others. But it's difficult, and we really thank those who I know, getting to spend a lot of time with people who work at various agencies that are helping people in a variety of ways, how difficult it is, how stressful it is, and you have my gratitude. And Mr. Navarro, a few more things before we...
A point of information. First of all, I wanted to provide my email address, and if I can ask the clerk to put up the PowerPoint presentation up on the screen. And while this information is up for those folks in the audience to write down, point of information, Mr. Reed from the San Luis Obispo Women's Shelter Program identified the affordable or housing need in Grover Beach. That's in relation to another request for proposals that the county released a couple, 3 months ago, I believe, where it's taken a different track than the regular 2012 program year that we have here. So those are there's a series of applications that we received for that funding. It's a little bit over $300,000. So I did not identify that in this presentation, but I will be coming before the board for the allocation of those funds. So going back to what's on the screen, again, my number is 781-5787, and my email address is tnavarro, and it's T-N-A-V-A-R-R-O at co.slo.ca.us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. So we will receive and file this item and move to our next hearing. All these are somewhat connected. Madam Clerk, could you please introduce this one?
Item number 36, a request to approve revisions to the existing community participation plan for the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Home Investment Partnerships, HOME, and Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG programs.
Okay. And who's going over here? Tony, Suzanne?
Yes. Okay. Good afternoon. Suzanne Adai, County Planner. Today we are requesting your approval of the revisions we made to the Community Participation Plan. A Community Participation Plan is required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, known as HUD, in order for the county to receive grant fundings from Community Development Grant Funds, blocks, and Home Investment Partnership Program. This plan establishes procedures for public participation and involvement when the county prepares action plans and the consolidated plan. In order to comply with HUD's regulations, we must include HUD's income definition for low and moderate income households and also include strategies for public participation and public outreach to minorities, disabled persons, and non-English speakers. In addition to these changes, we are also adding a new amendment process. It's called a minor amendment process. And the purpose of this new minor amendment process is to streamline the process of reallocating grant funds and save staff time. A minor amendment process is triggered when less than $25,000 in CDBG funds are reallocated between public services and administrative activities, and it results in the cancellation of a public service activity. A minor amendment process can be approved on a consent agenda. So we are requesting that your board approve or adopt the attached resolution approving the revised community participation plan. And this concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Suzanne. Any questions on this from colleagues? Seems straight ahead. Okay. I'll open it up to the public. I have, I believe, no request to speak. If
any federal funds. So, as you may remember, I come to you every year for the approval of an action plan. And so five of those action plans are part of a five-year plan. So it just is the progress towards meeting goals and objectives that are identified in the five-year plan over a yearly allocation of federal funds. Even though those funds are going down, it's going to be a little difficult to meet those goals, but we'll battle HUD with that problem. But it does involve and encourages community participation in the development of those goals. Again, it's primarily benefit low and moderate income folks, and it's specifically with the CDBG, the home, and the ESG funds. And soon we'll be amending the comp plan, as I mentioned earlier, for the new regulations under the Emergency Solutions Grant. It is includes a needs assessment for that five-year period and a strategic plan for the allocation of those funds. Again, I mentioned it is a five-year plan. It was recently approved May 4th of 2010 by your board. And so it identifies high, medium, and low priorities in there. And so what we're looking at is the inclusion of – here, I'm going to skip forward here. Actually, hold on. There we go. To identify infrastructure improvements at mobile home parks as a high priority. It is currently identified in the consolidated plan, but it's not mentioned separately, nor is it categorized as a high priority. It's just identified. And in speaking with members of the community, especially mobile home park owners, they thought this would be a good idea. I believe Supervisor Gibson also was supporting the idea. And so we're here to make that recommendation to your board that we identify that as a separate need in the consolidated plan. And one important point, this amendment is not applicable in the incorporated areas. It's strictly the unincorporated areas. The cities were consulted, but this was really a county effort, not the participating jurisdiction, so I definitely want to make that clear. Identifying mobile home park infrastructure needs as a high priority does not guarantee funding, but if the project or the mobile home park is eligible, which would mean they would need 51% of the residents on site to be predominantly low and moderate income, they could be eligible for funding. But again, the project has to be a competitive project. They have to demonstrate a need for the funds. And they just have to compete, just like everyone else. So I'll end my presentation there. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
All right. I see a question, I think.
More.
First, Mr. Gibson, and then Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. More a comment. I appreciate this thought coming forward. You may have noticed that Mr. Navarro and the team of are already engaging in one such infrastructure improvement program to replace wastewater infrastructure. I think, and just confirm my recollection, Tony, the one of the efficiencies of this, or one of the ways to make this a particularly cost-effective approach is to structure these as revolving loans, where you know this is money that we will get back and be able to roll over. So, again, without guarantee of any specific project getting funded, I think this certainly is an approach that works really well to try to protect existing affordable housing. And I think be interested to see how this works in the future. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have identified mobile home parks as one of the probably largest sources of affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County, so I think this recommendation is consistent certainly with helping maintain that situation with mobile home parks and make sure they're viable and can continue to exist in our county. One question, Tony, you mentioned that we revisit our plan every year and make recommendations, and my legislative assistant, who tracks all of this very closely, as you well know, raises the question, given the significant cutbacks in funding and Another thing that has happened since we first adopted the plan in 2010 is that we have our 10-year plan to end homelessness, the establishment of the Homeless Services Oversight Council and Granted Homelessness and projects for low-income.
You know, the board directs us to go through that, and we'll be happy to do that. But that's through our annual performance and evaluation report that we submit to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development every September. Now, it's a three-month process in collecting the beneficiary data from all the nonprofits, all the cities that participate in the urban county and the CDBG and home funds. You know, we evaluate, you know, how are we doing with meeting our five-year goals? And, you know, we recently received correspondence from HUD who they weren't happy that we did not meet some of our goals, but I also noted that, well, of course we didn't meet our goals. We didn't have sufficient funding. There is an avenue there, and we can keep telling HUD, you know, that the funding is going down. We cannot meet these five-year goals. If we need to look at our goals more, I guess, realistically with the cutbacks and anticipate that there will be a continual cutback for the next 3 years of that remain in the five-year plan, we can certainly do that and lower our numbers and in that. But it's a possibility. We can do that if so directed.
Okay, and maybe we can have that conversation then.
Absolutely.
Offline, because I think it is important that we don't have or set unrealistic goals, mm-hmm. that whatever we're striving for, we should do everything we can to achieve. And if because of the turn of events, if you will, mm-hmm. things have changed, then maybe we need to take a look at that.
Dana?
If I could add to that, Dana Lilly with your planning staff, this isn't the first time the county has revisited its consolidated plan after seeing successive budget cuts at the federal level. It was several years ago that our department brought to the board a change that was quite noticeable to some folks, which changed the priority of housing, raising rental housing to the top priority and ownership housing one slot below, simply because of how much money we could bring to bear, and ownership housing just didn't seem as compelling. So definitely Supervisor Patterson is raising a very good advice, and Tony's answer of probably should look at it with our annual review of performance. Once we know really what the cuts are for sure, is probably the best sequence.
Okay. Thank you, Dana. I'm going to open it up to the public. I have no request to speak and see none coming, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Staff recommendation.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Gibson. A roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Tony, once again.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. I was just so excited to hear you speak again. I skipped Madam Clerk. Please introduce the next item, Madam Clerk.
Item number 38, a hearing to consider the amendment to the Urban County of San Luis Obispo 2010 through 2015 consolidated plan.
Okay. Now, Tony.
Okay. Tony Navarro, Department of Planning and Building, once again. In this item, we have a major reallocation of CDBG funds by the City of Grover Beach. Back a couple months ago, the City Council reallocated the full balance of their CDBG funds from prior years, which is now only 2009 and 2010 funds, not including the 2011 funds, which they are expending up as we speak, but they're consolidating all their funding into one project that is called Public Improvement Project, which is really a sort of an umbrella project where later on the City Council will identify the access projects, the Americans with Disability Access projects along their city streets. All the funding is going to this one project. What may look a little daunting here is that the city's also reallocating some public services funds, specifically the, I'll actually put up the PowerPoints if we can do that. Well, let me go back a little bit. They are reallocating about $91,000, almost $92,000 in CDBG funds. And there's a public improvement project. But there are several projects that are being eliminated, including administration funds, an income survey by the city, the minor home repair program, which is a balance of what they had from what they began, but also several public facility projects that the city either completed or decided not to move forward with and put into this one project. But the part I was...
I have no request to speak, but still waiting. We will close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Look for a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Move by Supervisor Meacham. Second by Supervisor Gibson. If there's no further comments, roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you very much, Tony. Thank you very much. Suzanne, thank you. That is about it for us today. And I'm trying to remember when we are adjourning to as we head into the winter wonderland. January, Mr. Buckshaw, is it the 3rd or the 10th? The 10th. So we, the Board of Supervisors, wishes all those who are still listening and watching or may catch us on our most popular rerun nights a very happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year, all the good things, and be safe and continue to do good things. And we'll see you on January 10th, if not sooner. We are adjourned until then.